Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We'll fight to the death. We are soldiers. We are soldiers.
Thank you for once again coming to Bard's Logic, Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find more of the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. And tonight we have a special guest, Althea Shaw, on. And without any further ado, we will go ahead and bring her on. So thank you very much, Althea, for coming to the show. How are you? Althea?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for inviting me on, and
there
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing really well. Thank you very much for coming on. And so we'll get right into it for tonight. And, of course, we had you on a couple of the other shows when we were looking at the immigration, our illegal immigration. A lot of folks, of course, would be interested in hearing your story and what brings you on the show for tonight.
Well, I originally heard about your show. I was online the weekend of the national protests, and then someone sent out a tweet, and I responded to it. And I was sharing the story of my nephew, Jamil Shaw II. He was 17 years young, a superstar destined for greatness, and he was gunned down, executed, according to Bratton, who is now the chief of New York. He was the chief of LAPD at the time Jamil was murdered, and he said Jamil was executed and assassinated. And the gangbanger, we found out 2 weeks after his murder, that he was murdered by a gangbanger in the country illegally. And it's hard enough to deal with a sudden death like that. That's my brother's son, and it just was devastating to the family. And then to find out that he was murdered by a gang member, then that's extra like, oh, my God, because it was 3 doors from our home. And then we found out that this gang member was in the country illegally, and he was in custody. He was released from jail March 1st, 2008, because he was arrested in November 2007. And he was arrested for assault and battery on a police officer. He flashed a gun on people. He just was a bad seed. And he was arrested in November 2007, and they gave him 6 months. They gave him 6 months in jail, and on top of that, yeah, unbelievable. I mean, he had a record. He had a 1 on the and an 8 on the back of his back, from the top of his neck all the way down. He had just a 1 and an 8. He had BK that shows that he was out looking for black people, and just, you know, a known gang member, documented violent criminal. And they gave him 6 months, but on top of that, they gave him early release, 3 months early release. That's how he was released on March 1st. He wasn't even supposed to be released. Of course, ICE was supposed to pick him up, but if they were going to release him, they were supposed to release him for in 6 months. But they gave him early release. They released him March 1st, and within 24 hours, he was with another gangbanger, but according to the police, his probation, they released him on a Saturday night. And the probation was he was not supposed to be with other gang members. Now, why do you release? And then he was supposed to report to his probation officer on that following Monday. So he was just out free in the city of Los Angeles. He got with a gang member, and he had a driver. This female was a driver, and he had a gun all within 24 hours. And supposedly, he was looking for a neighbor who lived next door to us, but the neighbor was saying they only met once. He couldn't understand why he was looking for him. But he saw my nephew the next day, less than 24 hours. My nephew was just walking down the street, and he was going to shoot him right there. According to the testimony in court, the driver of the car testified that he was going to murder my nephew when he saw him, but she talked him out of it. And so they kept driving. They turned down the street. The next corner they made a turn, not knowing that my nephew was going to make that same turn because he was coming home. And then he went to the neighbor's house. And so the neighbor said, he asked for the neighbor. He said, he's not here. Tell him Pedro was here. That's the killer's name. And he walked back to the car. On his way back to the car, he saw my nephew. And according to testimony, he said, I'll be right back, and ran over to him. And according to the witness, is that he could hardly even run. His pants was like, you know how they have their pants low and everything. Put out a gun, shot him in the stomach. And according to the autopsy and where his body fell, he was trying to go around. And he, so I'm sure when he put out a gun, you know, I'm sure, you know, scared my nephew to death. And I don't want to cry, so. But he shot him in the stomach. And then...
That's terrible.
When his hands was over his head, he walked up to him and shot him in the head, and the bullet went through his hand into his head. And so that's what came out in trial. It took 4 years to go to trial because when he was in trial, he tried to kill someone while he was behind... in jail, he was in his cell. I don't know if I'm supposed to wait for a question, but just let me tell you this story. He was in his cell, and another black man was walking on his way to court with the escort of a deputy, and he reached out of his cell with a razor and cut his face, tried to kill him. And then, he broke someone's leg. He had all kind of fights. He tried to incite a riot. He did all of that. So the trial was, the court was postponed, and then he wanted to represent himself, you know, all of that stuff. And so he was found guilty November 2012. He was found guilty. And it's just been, you know, just unbelievable. The day he was murdered, he had asked my brother, could he go to the mall? And my brother was going to tell him no because it was a Sunday. He was going to tell him no. But the night before, he wanted to go to a party. He was like, Dad, can I go to the party? And my brother was like, no, you know you can't go to a party. You know, people could be shooting and stuff. And he was like, Dad, people don't have guns, I mean, all the time and all that stuff. So when he asked him about the mall, it was still daytime. And so he was like, yeah, you can go. And so, you know, it's like going to the mall. You know, we all saw him that day, happy go lucky, and then the next time you see him, you know, the neighbor's coming to your door saying, Althea, Jazz is shot, and my brother just literally lost it. And so, you know, it's devastating. A lot of time politicians, they don't even think about the devastation through no fault of our own, that all of this, just like a flash flood that comes through the family and the ripple effects. I mean, he was buried the day after my mother's birthday. You know, can you imagine the grandmother going to bury her grandson, and just all of the tragedy, not to mention his mother, Jamil, his mother, Anita Shaw, at the time was in Iraq serving the country. When they put her and told her that she had to come talk to, I forget the people she had to talk to, and when they told her that, you know, Jamil was murdered, she couldn't believe it, lost it and stuff, and then she, a matter of fact, mm-hmm. is preparing, they're sending her back to Afghanistan, so in a couple of weeks, but, the other side, the people who support illegal immigration, they don't think about the Americans who lost their lives are changed, not to mention all the people we've met since this happened who their loved ones are murdered or they're handicapped now. And it's just a horrible situation that, you know, I wouldn't even wish on anyone. And so that's kind of how we got into the illegal immigration situation and all that was going on since 2008. Because before then, I actually, living in Los Angeles, I was really upset with black churches because at the time I was thinking, these black churches, they're silent on the killing and stuff that's going on. But I didn't realize that after my nephew was murdered that the black churches are so connected to the government, in a sense, and the politics, and that's why they're silent, you know. So it just kind mm-hmm. of brought up a lot of stuff through, you know, my nephew's, murder. He was on his way. He was in 11th grade at Los Angeles High School, and he was already being looked at by Rutgers and Stanford and, you know, so many schools. Even after he was murdered, they were still sending stuff to the house trying to recruit him. It took time for everyone to understand. I mean, to hear the story about what happened, so they didn't know. So anyway, that's kind of how we got into it.
So is there any explanation for two things? One, why he was only given 6 months and then subsequently released only 3 months later?
Well, no, they didn't have an explanation. Basically, they were supposed after my nephew was murdered, we learned that Sheriff Baca was I think in 2005, he had signed up for a program, the 287G, that was a part of the secure communities where you weren't supposed to let them out. You were supposed to transfer them over to ICE. And so they never gave us a reason, but Sheriff Baca did tell us to our face at a meeting in April of 2008. At the time he was the sheriff, he recently resigned, but he told us that there are shot callers in jail, Hispanic shot callers, who, when they get out, they're ordered to shoot or kill a black male. That's what he told us to our face. And so why they would release him on a Saturday night, and then they took his word, you know, when they asked him, are you in the country legally? You know, they take their word. But they didn't give us no explanation, and then we even tried to sue to let them see that, you know, this was wrong. They were like, the courts pretty much told us, I'm paraphrasing it, but they pretty much told us, we know you're right. We know they messed up, but there's nothing you can do. That's what it boils down to. We know that he was supposed to enforce the laws. He was supposed to notify ICE. ICE was supposed to come get him. They were supposed to deport him after he did his time. Yeah, you're right, but sorry, basically. And then even when we went to criminal trial, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. go on. When we went to the criminal trial, we wasn't even allowed to mention that he was in the country illegally. We couldn't even mention
really?
It
That's
at
incredible.
All. It's a big, I mean, it's horrible, the politics in this. You can't even bring it up. And then Anita, who was, she's active in the military, she wanted to wear her uniform, and they fought that tooth and nail till the judge finally said, no, she could wear her uniform. But they didn't want them to know that Jazz was a good kid, you know, just, you know, never been arrested, never been suspended at school, doing good, doing all the right things in the program, staying busy, doing what he was supposed to do. They didn't want them to know that. They didn't want him to know, the jury to know he was in the country legally. His mother was in Iraq. And the district attorney told us we couldn't even bring it up. And after my nephew was murdered, we started supporting a law called Jamil's Law, which will deport gang members who are in the country legally. And all of the politicians who were once supportive of us when they found out Jazz was murdered by a gang member and that his mother was in Iraq, they were supportive until they found that he was in the country legally. Then they tried to shut us down, and the district attorney, who's supposed to be on the side of the people, she told us we couldn't even wear Jamil's Law T-shirts. She didn't want us to talk about the case, or it would be transferred. And so eventually she was thrown off the case, but it's almost like, I know there's some good district attorneys and stuff, but it's almost like they're on the same team in a way, kind of like the Republicans and the Democrats when it comes to immigration. You feel like in some ways both parties are failing us. It's like they kind of work together. That's how the trial was. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it was, I mean, I would have never thought that the prosecutor would attack us like she did.
Unbelievable.
And then we had to fight them, and so it just was one thing after another.
Do you recall the name of the politicians who once were behind you but once found out that the person who killed him was an illegal immigrant? Do you recall the name of those politicians?
Maxine Waters was supportive of us. She even worked with Maxine Waters and Dianne Feinstein. They worked for the Los Angeles, I mean, they worked with the Sentinel, which a magazine, a newspaper, the Los Angeles Sentinel, which is an active newspaper in the black community, and they orchestrated a campaign for people to write letters to get Anita back. I mean, when Anita, who was at the time in Iraq, they sent her back. They wanted to deploy her to go back, and she wanted to be here through the trial proceedings and stuff. So Maxine Waters, Feinstein helped with the campaign. Herb Wesson, who's the city council for this district, Bernard Parks, the mayor, Antonio Villaraigosa, who else? So many of the, I can't even think of them all, but they all were here. And then when they found out that he was murdered by a gang member in the country legally, they offered my brother, the mayor's office, offered my brother one of those positions where pretty much they give you a job. And I forget what they call it, but that's when they, where you're like the, what's that word, the chairperson of some kind of committee or something. So they had some position they offered him to basically be quiet. And then at the time, Doug McIntyre, which was one of the radio people, and Kevin James, who recently ran for mayor of Los Angeles, they were on KABC and KRLA when they heard about the murder. They was on the radio those times, I mean those stations, and they orchestrated this event where we were going to City Hall. And so we were going to City Hall to ask him about Jamil's Law. Will you guys support us? Can we at least agree to deport the gang members who are here illegally? And Herb Wesson, who is the current city council, they had my brother and Anita in a room and tried to keep them from even speaking. The people, all kind of supporters, were shouting out, bring the Shaw family out, you know. So they really tried to keep us quiet. And then after that, they smeared my nephew from at first. You know, they were all supportive of him. They knew he was a good guy. And then when they found out we were going to support Jamil's Law, you would think he was all of a sudden the leader of MS-13. I mean, they just really targeted him. He was just 17 years old, and they just, you know, so it was horrible how the politicians who once all supported us, you know, turned against us. And the last thing I want to say is even right now, three doors from our home, the mayor, Sheriff Baca, City Council, Bernard Parks, all of them came. They had a ceremony on our street because, and the media, they all were here. And my nephew, he was murdered at the same place where when Antonio Villaraigosa, who was the mayor of Los Angeles, when he ran for office, one of his pledges was he wanted to plant 1 million trees. And so He came on our street.
Well, I like to say that.
Yes, so they just happened to pick our street as one of the streets. They had this big old photo op, you know how they do. And so my nephew, so the mayor came over with my nephew and my brother, his name is also Jamel Shaw. They came over to talk to my nephew, and so the mayor helped him plant that tree. And it just so happened that he was murdered right next to the tree. So they came back out. Yes, they came back out, had a ceremony. There's a plaque to this day with the mayor's name on it and the city council. And it even took 2 weeks longer, Robert, to get the plaque on the street because the city council and the mayor was fighting over their names because the mayor wanted his name on it, but he didn't think the councilman should have his name on it. So that's how they all were
ridiculous.
So focused on that. Yeah, so that took time. But, yes, they all were supportive. Now Maxine Waters, she wouldn't return our phone call. Karen Bass, none of them. They don't, you know, they don't care. You know, they just don't care.
And I've got a question from someone from the chat. Sometimes we were able to do that here on the show, and thank you very much for coming to the show. And the call name is CX3 Conservative. And if you'd like to chime in later on when we're opening up the line to the audience, CX3 Conservative, just give us a call at 347-945-7428. And we may backtrack a little bit with this question, but that's okay. We've got plenty of time tonight. Were you ever? The question is, why weren't you allowed to bring it up, and I guess about him being an illegal immigrant, why weren't you allowed to bring that up? And also the question was, didn't your attorney call for a mistrial?
No, actually they let us know that the prosecutors, they're not really our attorneys. They're the attorneys for the victims. But they told us we could not bring it up because the district attorney, before she was transferred, Michelle Hennessy, she was kicked off the case. She told us, if we wear our T-shirts to trial, because it was before the trial when they said you can wear buttons and T-shirts to this preliminary stuff because that takes a while before trial starts. But once trial starts, you can't wear any buttons, T-shirts, or anything. Well, the prosecutor, they wanted us not to wear, not the defense attorney, the prosecution, deputy district attorney, they wanted us not to wear the T-shirts. And she told us if we wear it, they're going to transfer the case to San Francisco and we're not going to be able to come. And then they told us that we're not allowed to bring it up because it may be used as a where the jury may not have sympathy for him, and then therefore it could come back as a, you know how when you, I forget the term, I can't think about it, right? I mean, think of that term where when you have to do the case all over again, appeal,
retrials.
Where he could be, he could be found guilty and it could be overturned. So, you know, they have a whole system. We talk to people who, since we've been to the trial, they're going through it, and their loved one was murdered by someone illegally, they can't bring it up. You cannot, you're not allowed to bring it up, or they tell you, you know, you could be thrown out, and it's just not allowed. They really don't have a good reason, because we really had a hard time understanding that, but they assured us that it could jeopardize the case, and you're not allowed, and ACLU and all of them, they went to, you know how they write lawsuits and they get it so that you can, that they're protected. They have a lot of rights, even though they're here illegally, they have a lot of rights. But
yeah,
I was also thinking,
it's unbelievable how much you've got here.
Yes, and it's almost like the courts, they know that they don't have jurisdiction over these people because they're here illegally. So to ignore that part, they just get everyone to don't even talk about that. Don't even talk about
that.
You can't bring it up. And
just to reiterate, part we made earlier, is talk about Maxine Waters, and he said, how long did she stay on board? From my understanding, she stayed on board as long as she thought, you know, you know, he was murdered, but once she found, you know, she was with you, but once she found out that he was murdered by an illegal immigrant, then that's when her support stopped, correct?
Yes. They all were on board, I would say, for about 2 weeks. For about 2 weeks, because that's about how long it took. Because actually, we were the people who told them where the killer was, because when he came to see the neighbor was so, he just felt responsible because my nephew and him would play in the pool in our backyard. They grew up as little kids together. So he felt so responsible, and he came over. He's like, I know who the guy was. So we had to call the police and all that. So all of that took like about 2 weeks for it to filter through the media. And that's when, man, they all left us. And they didn't just ignore us or leave us. They attacked us. I mean, even to this day, I just have to be strong and not even think about it so much, because it'll break your heart the way they treated us like we were illegals.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were criminals. And they were mad at us because we were mad that my nephew was murdered. They were mad at us for standing up. Even my brother, his life was threatened by all kind of people. And then we had the FBI that came to the house and took a report. But at the end of the day, none of them were on our side. None of them. They all turned their back on us. They didn't help us with anything else. Once they tried to first silence us and then get us to not talk about that, and, you know, they would send people to tell us that that we're being used by the conservatives, the Republicans are using us.
No, here we
go. At that time, we were willing to talk to anyone about it, about what happened and stuff. So it just so happened that because before we found out he was murdered by an illegal, they were on, my sister-in-law Anita, they were on CNN. My brother, Fox News was supportive to the end. I mean, they still support us. But CNN, 247, all the channels. And when they found out he was murdered by an illegal alien gang member, and that we wanted to support the deportation of the gangs, within 2 weeks, we were, like, targeted, you know, stop wearing those T-shirts, because we bought these T-shirts because my brother, he just was so angry about everything. He had this T-shirt on that said, with a picture of my nephew, that it said, illegal alien gang banger killed me. And so he would wear that in their faces, and so they didn't like that. And they didn't like that at all, and so they wanted us to stop talking. So within two weeks, you know, we weren't able to speak to them. We couldn't get a phone call through or anything.
Wow. And didn't Fox News do the same thing, or just
No, Fox
like
News
CNN,
was supportive from day one, and they're still supportive. You know, they even sent someone over to the bridge that we did, the overpass, and my brother.
Oh, okay.
Anita was on with Sean Hannity. My brother was on with Megan, and my mom was on with Megan Kelly. O'Reilly had me on, and then on the conservative radio, you know. So, yes, they were supported, because at the end of the day, of course, if it wasn't for the conservatives, you know, we have our, you know, our radio show, and we, you know, talk to people, but, you know, we're grassroots. So,
mm-hmm.
But they were very supportive of us, and but CNN, MSNBC, I think NBC came around. I don't even think MSNBC was ever interested, because when they, Al Sharpton and all of them, because I would say once it got to that level, they were all focused on, we were supporting conservatives, and we couldn't even get them then.
Invited. You're being manipulated by the conservatives, yeah.
And we were invited to hold their feet to the fire in 2008, and Stephen King had a hearing for not just our family, but four other families who were murdered by illegals. And Maxine Waters and Zoe Lofgren, they fought against that. And when they got through fighting, it, Stephen King couldn't even say it was really a hearing. It was almost like a meeting. They fought against it, and they didn't want us there. They didn't want us there, and so it wasn't even an official hearing. So they, it was very eye-opening to see how they were so determined to try to shut us down, you know. And then, I mean, even like about a year and a half, 2 years ago, because my nephew was murdered in 2008, my brother went to meet with the city councilman, Herb Wesson, and he was going to help him with Jamil's Law, because through the trial, it was 4 years of that took to go to trial, but when we went to trial in 2012, the LAPD testified about this gang called the Al Sage Clique. And that was a gang that this killer was from. There's 100 of them. And they literally operate like they get promotions, because when he murdered my nephew, he had to, because he actually was going up for a promotion, Robert. He was going up for a promotion. And so you have to have another known gangbanger with you present. You have to get out the car, because once this little Mexican boy was going in the car, so they put out the orders from jail, get out the car and do it. And so we learned through the LAPD that these gangs, their only job is to target blacks. And so we tried to get who's the black city councilman to help us. And to this day, they still don't want to help us with Jamil's Law. They don't even want to deport gang members. We talked to Karen Bass, and she's a representative in the House. Still won't. I mean, in about 2 weeks, she's going to come. She's having a town hall. We're going to go again to the town hall and bring it up. But when they come, we speak out. But at the end of the day, they just don't like us.
Do they ever give you any reasonings on why they're not supporting yourself and Jamil as well?
Well, originally they told us because Jamil's Law was started with Walter Moore, who was running for mayor, and he said that he was so tired of the killing when that happened. He said, well, let's have something, let's just do a law with these gang members. So they were telling us that we shouldn't work with him because he's a right-wing wacko. That's what they were telling us, that we shouldn't work with him. And so it's almost like, it wasn't even about us no more. It was about Republicans and conservatives. They didn't even, you know, they just was telling us, you're on their side. But they didn't want to hear us. So, you know, it was like, we don't even have a side. We're on the side of America, and this is some wrong mess going down. Can you help us? That's the side we were on. But they were like, you know, you're with those right-wing wackos. They're using you. You're in the talk radio. And that was the only reason that we could think of is now you're on the wrong side. But had my nephew been murdered by a cop or a white person, I'm telling you, the way they were so fired up when it first happened, they it would have been a mess. But because it was a gang member, he was Hispanic, it was like he was just another dead black person.
And that's a shame. And that's, and I'll tell you what, you know, speaking of the way they cover the news, and I won't talk about this a lot, at least not this portion of the show, maybe later on in the show when we do our roundtable discussion, is that, you know, it's interesting in how they're treating the Hamas-Israel conflict as well. But I've been noticing that, you know, like CNN, which is a shame because Newt Gingrich is on there with Crossfire, and you know, so I'll watch it for that. And I stopped watching Fox News pretty much after the 2012 election, and then moved over to CNN, you know, watching them, especially, you know, it had a lot to do with how they covered that, and you know, pretty much showed, you know, their support with Mitt Romney thing. But that's, as I said, that's for another show, maybe later on. But when and talk about is, you know, they'll talk about, you know, oh, well, we'll cover Israel, and then when they talk about Hamas, they talk about all of these kids are being killed, and they show pictures, all these pictures of these kids, you know, who are killed or something like that, because Hamas are using the schools and the kids as human shields to hide their weaponry, But then I don't see any pictures of any devastation or anybody killed or kids injured or killed on the Israeli side. So it's definitely, you know, biased, you know, towards Hamas, at least on CNN with what I'm seeing. So I could see where there's, you know, the thing that's a shame is when they cover stories such as yours and Jamal's Law is, you know, when they start mixing it in with the right-left, you know, paradigm, the conservative and liberal paradigm, it really takes, because for me at least, it doesn't, you know, this isn't something that is a right or left issue. I mean, these are people who are coming in illegally. They are breaking the law. They're killing people. And I just do not understand why, you know, they try to politicize it when this affects anybody. They don't care. I mean, these gangbangers, you know, they're coming in. They're killing people. They don't care if you're a liberal. They don't care if you're conservative. They're just, you know, in this case, you said, you know, they were targeting blacks. And so, you know, that affects everybody. And it's amazing the Democratic Party, who tries to ensconce themselves as being, you know, pretty much the party that represents black folks here in America, I think they, you know, really let you guys down.
They definitely let us down. I mean, you know, just like I said, they did more than just ignore us. They attacked my nephew. They act like he was in a gang, and because he had on red, he had a Spider-Man backpack on, and he's had so much. He just loved Spider-Man. They blew that out of proportion, and they just, I mean, they did what they did to us, what they accused Republicans for doing to Trayvon Martin. That's what they were doing to us, because in our community, a lot of people say, you know, that's just like how they did Trayvon Martin because he was attacked by them. We always looked at it like, at the end of the day, Jazz had no record. He had no nothing to be compared to Trayvon or anyone. He was, I mean, but that's how they attacked us, just, you know, just really did us wrong, you know, and they just didn't care, and they don't care because they're, in their mind, the way the politicians communicated is that it's the white man. You know, and they just stay on that and stay on that, and somehow they're just able to sell it like, you know, if you weren't with the Republicans or conservative, we would, you know, could help you guys, because I'm not Republican, but I'm conservative. And so they just look at it like, because you want to deport the illegals, we can't even work with you no more. You know, we can't even talk to you no more. But there's a lot of black people, even though there's a lot of them that voted for Obama, there's a lot of black people that believe that these illegals should be deported. You know, you don't see it in the media, but they, you know, really believe that. Sometimes they don't associate it to, do you see that we need to stop, that this is Obama's amnesty? They don't sometimes see it like that, but they, you know, like they try to justify, like, you know, I don't know why Obama's doing that, but that's not right, you know, that kind of thing. But they're against this this illegal immigration stuff. They just don't want to speak out about it, and because they, in some ways, it's just been penetrated in the community that Republicans are bad and they're out to, you know, they're evil, they're against us, and so they just abuse anyone that's black that agrees with anything conservative. You're the problem, you're the target, you know. They don't see it as, well, you know, let's just look at it as he's violating the law, they're supposed to secure the border, and then people say, well, Bush didn't secure it, which is true, you know, he didn't, but why we can't get it secured? Both sides just seem like when it comes to that border, they just don't want to, you know, secure that border. And I mean, and then to be honest, there's some Republicans, California Republicans, who they do not support us. They do not support Jamil's Law.
Well, because right now, at least nationally, I don't know what the numbers are in California, but right now, why I think there's a lot of kowtowing to the Hispanic community, because a lot of the Hispanic, not all of them, but a lot of the Hispanic communities would like to see amnesty, things of that nature. And currently, right now, the Hispanic community in America, and if we're going to be talking about national politics, actually is a larger portion of the population. I believe blacks are about 12.5% of the population, and they have been surpassed now by Hispanics, which I believe now are 13%. So they're playing the numbers. And what the why both parties aren't is they're both wanting to pander to them in order to try to get votes.
Exactly. And it's like they have changed the demographics, and then they change the language, and then they move us to the back. And it's, you know, it's just unbelievable to see how, you know, just it's just really frustrating and very disappointing that they don't even want to deport gang members who are here illegally. I mean, they act like...
Right,
even,
I don't understand.
You know,
they're not saying deport all of them, just the gang members.
That's all we've ever said, even though we don't believe, you know, any of them should be here illegally, because it's almost, in a way, it's almost like in a system, in apartheid, seems like, because there's different set of laws that if you're here and you're illegal, then that's not really a law anymore, and just, you know, it's a lot of gray that they've created. But then they have these strict laws that Americans that we have to follow, and, you know, just it's just unbelievable to see that no one is standing up, seems like, as far as to stop what's going on, and they don't even want to, you know, deport the gang members. But we're going to continue to, you know, be more vocal out there with Jamil's Law, and because even a couple of months ago, maybe about 6 months ago, we were talking to Karen Bass, and in public they'll say, well, you know, let's have a meeting and, you know, let's talk about how we could implement Jamil's Law. And so she would agree to a meeting, but then when you call the office, you're not going to get an appointment. You know, it's like they will not talk about Jamil's Law because they know that it makes them look ridiculous, that they don't even want to deport the gang members, and then they're supposed to be there to represent us. It's just really unbelievable how they think that if you're here illegally, it's just not a crime anymore.
Yeah, I mean, they just choose to, it's like they just choose to ignore it.
And they,
choose to ignore the law.
And they
ignore
the...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say,
no,
and how they forget about the families who have been murdered. I know people can go to jamilslaw.com. There's also a website called www.ojjpac.org/memorial.asp. I know that sounds like a lot, but www.ojjpac.org/memorial.asp. And there are so many Americans who have lost their lives that, I mean, if we put them in, I mean, they're in every city, in every district. Even Dianne Feinstein, she came out with a report talking about illegal, I don't know if she used the word illegal alien gangs, but she may have, that they are in every city in the country, from Dianne Feinstein. But they don't realize that every city in the country, Americans are dead, and they don't even talk about it. Even Luis Gutierrez, they won't even mention it. You know, I mean, that's just the hardest part, is how they won't even bring up the fact, even if they say, you know, I understand, you know, that you're hurting your son or your mother, your father, your husband, you know, your wife who's murdered. I understand. They don't even say that. They won't even bring that up.
Well, I just have one more question before I want to bring on Dan Gray, who he's a contributor here on the show, and he also is the one who gave me the information that made it available for me to be able to contact you. So I really thank you, Dan, for giving me that information so we can get on the show. But before I bring him in, I just have one more question. Is there any congressmen, congresswomen, or senators that have kind of taken up the mantle, taken up the banner of your cause for Jamil's Law?
There's one congressman, Walter Jones. North Carolina. Well, the Congress is getting ready to end.
Wow, almost across the nation for you. Go ahead.
Yes, you know, I mean, we couldn't find anyone out here, but he wrote the law that's going to expire when the Congress session ends. But he did write a law. I'm trying to think. It was the Jamil Shaw Memorial Act, and we got a couple of supporters, even a couple of California supporters, but it just died. It died in the House because they were saying, which we could understand. They were saying, well, they don't want a conference at all. Yeah, it just died in the House because they said they don't want a conference because if they conference in the Senate, we'll add the Gang of Eight junk. And so, you know, we're going to try again. It was a Congressman Campbell of California. We're going to try again to try to get maybe Daryl Issa, one of them. You know, they just, now, Roy Bacher, he did support us. He was, him and Campbell, they both supported us. So we're going to try again to get Jamil's law, the Memorial Act. And that's basically the crime act that will let Americans know that it basically will require the FBI to keep statistics. Because just like I said, they don't want to bring it up in trial. They don't want people to know. They just, I mean, we all know when you hear crimes, they don't say anything about this person is not even in the country. Sometimes they do it, but not that much out here anyway. And the Jamil Shaw Crime Act will require the FBI to put those numbers out, and which would mean they'll have to start documenting it, because right now no one is documenting it. I know Stephen King came out some years ago and was saying it was 25 Americans every day that are murdered, but there's no official documentation. So that's what the Jamil's Law Act would do, but it expired. It was for a 2013 and 2014 session, so it'll expire, and then we'll try to do it again.
Well, we'll definitely like to keep posted on that, and there's something I want to discuss with you later on about your show that you have here on Blog Talk Radio. But first, I do want to bring Dan in. So, Dan, I'm opening up your mic. Thank you very much for coming to the show. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. I had a little bout with flesh-eating bacteria. Don't worry, folks. My immune system is so strong right now that if you've got a cold, where are you, Robert, in Ohio? And Althea,
yeah.
You're in L.A., I think. But my cold could kill, my immune system could kill your cold right now. Anyway, I was listening to Althea. I've been aware of the situation that happened with Jamil. This was a, as she says, more than just her own family's loss. This was a loss to the entire community. This is a young man. I can say boy because he was not 18 and not because he was black. Who cares? He was a boy who was a good boy, who was a hardworking boy from a good family. And he had good grades, too. And this young man, he could have been somebody. You see all these professionals in the NFL and these people who are sports stars who are really badly behaved. And then you see those good ones, the ones who get up there, black, white, yellow, who cares, the ones with character, the ones whose heads aren't swayed and turned by you know, the degrading aspect of fame. And he could have been that, but we'll never have that. Our country and her family was deprived of this young man who would now, you know, by now, he would have had some sort of career. He'd have a college degree. He might have a profession. He could have a family by now. You know, you could be a great aunt. This is just, it's unconscionable. And yes, I know everyone out there who wants to make apologies will say that the fact that it was happened to be an illegal didn't matter. But here's the deal. As a citizen, had he been arrested for those things, this thug, this murderer, then he would have paid the penalty and not been released. They don't have a catch-and-release policy for people who are born here. And when they do let somebody out, it becomes a huge scandal. You see it in the newspapers. And the police, the prosecutors, whoever let him out, they are made to pay the price for making such a terrible, terrible error. This was no error. They deliberately kicked this guy loose on the streets, knowing everything about him. They knew about this guy, and they did it anyway. And as far as the politicians who let you down, Althea, well, it's a never-ending story, and I'll tell you, you look at your own governor out there, Governor, Governor Brown.
Yes.
He made a very, very eloquent religious appeal. We're supposed to be, you know, as if this guy actually believes in anything. I don't know what he believes in, but he says we have to be, you know, good Christians, good Jews. We have to let these folks in. Look, I feel sorry for them if they're living in a bad. They need to fix their country, and we need to be a shining example and let in the ones who are legal. I work with a Mexican guy. His name is Jesus. I shouldn't say Mexican guy. He used to be a Mexican guy. He came to this country legally. He is an American guy. When he came here, the first job he had was working, trying to dismantle cartels, working with the Justice Department. And he worked in banking. Now he's working in my office. And this is a guy that, Althea, Robert, you'd be proud to have him as your neighbor. He works hard. He's honest. He's very concerned about his family. He attends PTA meetings. He goes to the local government. He knows more about the Constitution than almost anybody I know who's born here, which is a real, real sad thing to say. And you've got Nancy Pelosi from out in California who said last week that, you know, these illegals, many of whom are 17 to 25-year-olds, many of whom are illegal not just because they're coming in the country illegal, but they're criminals, not all of them certainly,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the people who do come here, they just want to get a job. You know, I sympathize. We got 92.5 Americans out of work, so you know we don't really have any jobs to spare right now. But she said that Pelosi here, that they're like baby Jesus. The illegals are like baby Jesus. I mean, how can you hate baby?
Crazy.
I'm Jewish. I love baby Jesus. I mean, who doesn't? How can you not? She also then upped it, and she said that without illegal immigrants, undocumented, whatever they are, in ancient Egypt, this is a woman who claims to be a Catholic, Robert, I think your wife is Catholic, my Catholic.
Right.
Without that, in ancient Egypt, there would have been no Moses. There would have been no Ten Commandments. When anyone who's ever watched TV around, Easter time or Christmas time or, you know, comes on all the time, has seen Charlton Heston, my president, by the way, and they've seen the Ten Commandments, which is pretty close to the Bible story, unlike the lies that they're putting out there with this new Noah thing. They use lies. Look at Dianne Feinstein, who talks about there being the presence in every city. This is a woman who has said, I'm not making this up, I'm not reading anything into it. She said she wants to take all of your guns away. Mr. and Mrs. America, this is a quote, turn them in. If we had the votes, we'd do it. And she, by the way, she has a gun permit. She's actually pretty tough.
Yeah, it's okay most for them. They don't have to live by our rules.
That's what Althea was saying, two sets of rules. Now, I'll tell you, this is the thing that gets me. Black folks, I grew up in Bill Cosby's neighborhood in Philly, okay? White, black, all in the same block, went to the same schools. We're all pals, in and out of other's mom's kitchens. Don't backtalk any neighbor lady because you get it from her. Who marches you to your mom, you get it from your mom, and that ain't nothing because you're going to wait all day for your father to come home.
mm-hmm.
And that's the point. All of the white kids, all the black kids, we had some yellow and brown kids, even back in the 60s, we had fathers, and we had mothers, and we had families like Althea's and like Robert's and like mine where we cared for each other, we supported each other, and we called each other when we were wrong. We tried to correct each other, and that is what it takes, not a village. The basic unit of government is a family. Now, not just Democrats and not just Republicans, they call themselves progressives for a while. I call them statists because they want the big state that basically runs everything. You call them Nazis, communists, boil it down, it's really the same thing. They took a vibrant community. The black community in Philadelphia, where I grew up, my family's been here since around the turn of the last century. We came from Eastern Europe. There were three black families living in Philadelphia for 300 years. Same neighborhoods, good, solid neighborhoods. Not in poverty, okay? Middle class. Where'd the middle class go for whites and blacks? But they took them with these with Lyndon Johnson's big society programs, and we're going to take care of you and help. Who doesn't want to help kids? Who doesn't want to help a mom who has kids? Who doesn't want
to?
And
I got a story to tell you later, but on a radio show I heard, Dan. Go ahead.
Yeah, and you can't keep the husband in the house, and well, then why have a husband? We'll pay you more for the kids. And now the percentages, which were almost the same back when I was a kid, they were almost the same for whites and blacks of out-of-wedlock births. Now they're through the roof. And the problem with this statist plantation that they've put blacks and a lot of whites on is, seen that they've also used abortion. And the biggest sin, and I'm not a religious guy, the biggest crime, how about the biggest tragedy? Pick your adjective, is abortion. Millions and millions and millions of people who didn't even make it to 17 and have a chance to have some life before it's ended violently. And in the black communities, in the large cities, upwards of half, I kid you not, folks, half of all pregnancies end in abortion. And unfortunately, and this is a growing trend in every demographic, all these kids without parents. Now, you got these kids coming in without parents who are illegal, and some of them are kids, and they're going to be fostered by who? I mean, who's the federal government going to pick? I don't know. I don't trust the federal government. I think they're going to pick child molesters. I'm not kidding you, folks. I really fear that. I don't have any evidence on that, but given how screwed up they've done just about everything else, and by letting – so the black community, which is still about the same as it was when I was a kid, about 11%, it would probably be bigger. It would certainly be stronger and more prosperous. These were homeowning people back in the 60s, people with good jobs, people who supported their churches and et cetera. And now look at the big cities. The communities are just broken. You drive down some places. Alan West went back to where he grew up in Georgia and drove down. I was speaking to him, and he said it's all liquor stores and burnout buildings. Even the churches are gone in a lot of places. This is terrible. So by bringing in this vast potential voting block of illegals, they're hoping that they can count on them, get them on that state tit, get them sucking those benefits and not having to do anything for them, and that they'll vote for the statists. Then who cares which party it is? They're really much the same. And they are causing this turmoil, this crisis, so that they can solve it. It's a cycle. They say there's a crisis. They put some legislation out. It gets worse through supposedly unintended consequences. And, of course, they have to step in and solve the crisis. And bit by bit, it gets to a point where you can't solve it and it's broken completely. They are actually hoping, and I'm really pleased this has not happened in America. There's been a lot of restraint. They are hoping for provocative violence. That gangbanger went out looking to murder black people, American black people. He didn't give a damn. Nobody is going out on the patriot side that I'm aware of, and if they are, I'm going to condemn them, saying, I'm going to look for a brown-skinned person so I can shoot him. That's just as bad. That's exactly the same thing. But our bosses in Washington are actually hoping this is going to happen. That's why they're being so provocative. Mm-hmm. And they're demonizing those of us, again, like Althea said, of all backgrounds from all over the country who are just saying, we're not against immigrants, we're not against legal immigrants, but right now we don't need extra immigrants, and we certainly don't want anyone who's an illegal immigrant, period. But they demonize us. They call us names. We're the ones. Just
we don't like
saying,
children. We don't want to see children being taken care of.
For God's sakes, you know, listen, you got to ask what's possible. I try and take care of my community, my family, as much as I put everything I've got into doing for other people, not because I'm trying to anyone think that I'm a better guy than anyone else or anything. It's just, it makes me feel good. It's the way I was raised. It's the way you're supposed to be. That's what a lot of people are like that. But I'm one person, and there is a limit to what I can do. I cannot support by myself. If every single person in my little town, we got like 450 people. It's a very little town. I mean, we're near other little towns. But if they all stopped working, if they all got sick, if they all, whatever it was, and I was the only one who was able to do things, I don't have the power physically to do that. Together, with all of us working, we have the power to do almost anything. I mean, you look at an Amish barn raising, and they've got beams the size of tree trunks, and something that would take one person, assuming they could even do it with all kinds of mechanical advantages, it would take one person 2 years, and it wouldn't be easy. They'd be risking their lives. It takes a community who get together. They have a great time. The kids are playing. The moms are cooking, and the dads are all working up a sweat, and they put together a barn that will last for 200 years in an afternoon. So working together, we can do it. But you can't have all these freeloaders, and the facts are the facts. The largest percentage of people in this country right now who are utilizing emergency services for hospitalization, who are utilizing welfare, in many places they don't vet properly, they are illegals. And I had mentioned before on this show, before I turn it back over to you, since I work in the unemployment office, that we have what's called the SAVE system, which is very easy to use. And if you have someone who's trained, and they literally, they get a clear copy, a photocopy, front and back of somebody's immigration card that says they're legally here. And they can compare that to an online database that you have to have special access to. So I wouldn't just let anyone use this, but you can swear people in. You can have an office that deals with this. And they can say, yeah, it's the same person. If it's not the same person, they can have that verified. They can ask for secondary verifications. And yet, even with that system, which is pretty darn good, just today we had a person who was applying for unemployment, and they're a real person with a real Social Security number and have real wages in my state of Pennsylvania, and they're going to qualify for real. But we've also noticed that there are five different people in five different states all working full-time at the same time as this one's in PA working full-time all year with the same Social Security number. Those people are criminals, and the numbers that I've been able – I just spoke with an investigator today who does audits. It's at least 7/10 at least, and they're not even sure of the number. There are American criminals who will steal identities, certainly. But if you don't have any identity, you have to steal one to be able to do this. They are taking our jobs, and there are no jobs. People, who's going to cut the grass? You've never driven by and seen a white guy or a black guy cutting grass. You know, who's gonna work in the hotels? Go to these hotels. Yeah, you're going to see an awful lot of illegals. In fact, for that matter, a good friend of mine is a patriot who's a lot of them happen to be tractor-trailer drivers. Go to a truck stop. Folks, it's safe. There's great security and great food, usually. When you're driving around, if you happen to be on the highway, you have a cup of coffee and a great coffee, stop in at one of the truck stops in your neck of the woods and listen to the languages being spoken and ask yourself, $50,000 a year in up jobs, work hard, be responsible, but you can build yourself up into an owner operator. You can have your own business in time. And ask, there are no Americans who are out of work who would love to be doing this. Do we really need to be giving special deals and special treatment to people coming here? Do we want to call everybody a refugee? And for that matter, right now in the Middle East, there is a Holocaust going on, and it's not going on in Gaza where the Israeli military is trying really, really hard not to kill people. But you put a baby in front of a rocket, and what are you going to do? You leave the rocket there? There's a Holocaust going on in the Middle East with Christians. In Syria, the radical terrorists, they're killing Christians. In Iraq, ISIS is killing Christians. There is a vetted video out there. I mean, this is real stuff. Half an hour straight of murders, 1,500 people killed with knives, one after another.
Unbelievable.
And
let's get go ahead, Dan. Finish that thought up. We'll bring
off.
No,
you know what?
Go ahead.
Yeah, you know how I am. It's good you're here moderating.
Yes, I do. I have to watch the clock sometimes, but we always appreciate your input, Dan. So, Dan, we'd just like to open up the mic back to you. And if anyone else would like to chime in to tonight's show, there's still about 53 minutes left of the live portion. And then, of course, we have the extended period that we will probably go into after that, but go ahead and give us a call if you'd like to listen in or chime in. Dial 347-945-7428. And if you'd like to chime in, just push the 1 on your number dial. Again, the number is 347-945-7428. Back to you, Althea.
Well, first I want to say thank you, Dan, for telling Robert about our story and just helping us get the word out. We really, really appreciate that. And I can relate to a lot of things you're saying. I know when we were little, my dad, he moved us to this home in 1971 from Compton because he wanted us to have a home. And so we moved here, and it's a very diverse, very nice neighborhood, a lot of, you know, homeowners. And in some case, I mean, in some ways, the black church failed the black community because the only way they were able to bring in the abortions and the welfare and all of that is because of the black church, because there was a time when blacks were really connected with the church, really into the word and going to church and all of that. And it was a big deal in the black community. And now it's nothing like that because what they're doing doesn't even line up to the word of God. So therefore the church really was a thing that destroyed the black community because they were able to bring all of, you know, the junk they did just by being with the 501c3, that's a whole other story. But that's really the problems that the Democrats were able to destroy the black community, is that it came through the black church. And the other thing I wanted to mention was, I know a lot of times people tell our family, well, it doesn't matter that Jamil, who we all call Jazz, so it doesn't matter if Jazz was murdered by a gang member, or if he was in it doesn't matter if he was murdered by someone in the country legally. We hear that a lot. But see, that's everything, though. That does matter. That's the bulk of it, that on March 2nd, 2008, one thing we know, I mean, Jazz could have got murdered in, or in a car accident or whatever, but one thing we know is that the person who murdered him, he wouldn't have done it. So therefore, you know, that's everything to us, is that when people say that, it doesn't even make sense to say it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that your nephew was murdered. It does matter because he wasn't supposed to be here. He was supposed to be on our street. He was supposed to be in this country. He had a history. When he was in junior high school, because he came to this country when he was 4 years old, we found that out. No fault of his own, they were trying to tell us, that, you know, it wasn't his fault. He put a school on lockdown when he was in junior high school, middle school. That the school now is called Johnny Cochran. At the time, it was called Mount Vernon. The school went on lockdown because of him. And so all of these things that happened, he wasn't supposed to be in this country. So him being here changed our lives forever. And a lot of times, people don't want to accept the fact that there's a story, Billy Inman, I-N-M-A-N. If you ever get a chance, you would love to talk to his father, Robert. Dustin Inman is the son. Billy is the father.
Yes.
And
send me an email with the information, the contact information. I'll get a hold of him.
Yeah, because he was murdered. His son was murdered on Father's Day. Now his wife is handicapped, and you know, and so now he's still loose on the streets. He was deported 3 or 4 times, drunk driving. So you know, a lot of people. Cheryl Green, murdered black girl riding her bike, murdered by somebody who wasn't supposed to be in the country. So, you know, that just burns me up when I hear people say, it doesn't matter. It does matter. And if it was your loved one murdered by someone in the country illegally, and then they have the nerve to join a gang after they're here. And the last thing I wanted to mention was a lot of times people try to tell us, well, you shouldn't call them aliens. You know, they're illegal aliens. They try to make us think that's like the N-word. But if you look up DREAM Act, what the Democrats wrote,
undocumented
the acronym
Democrats.
A is for alien, right? They did that acronym. The A stands for alien. When they came up with these illegal kids, the UAC was unaccompanied alien children. So they put it out there because they know that they're here illegally, and that's the legal term, but they try to guilt us into you know, they're not, because first they want you to call them immigrants, then they don't want you to call them illegal, because if you say undocumented, that sounds like somebody that they may have just lost or forgot their ID at home. But if you say illegal, you know somebody committed a crime, and they don't like that. So anyway, I just feel like that they try to get, you know, they always try to say, well, don't say that, you know, try to be politically correct. I'm like, no, that's what they are, and somebody has to say it sometimes. But anyway,
well, for them,
I just wanted to add
well,
that.
For them, illegal is subjective. And
right.
For them, the term illegal is subjective. They pick and choose what laws and who they apply to.
And when they want to use it. And the very last thing I did want to mention was Governor Brown. Several years ago, my brother Jamil was at they had this rally at the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors, and they had people who were murdered with gun violence, because they didn't want to say illegals, but gun violence. And so they invited my brother to speak, and Jerry Brown was one of the people who spoke also. And so he knows the story. He knows the story, what happened to Jazz. He knows the story that he was murdered by the gangbanger, by the gangbanger here illegally. And, you know, he doesn't care neither. You know, they just don't care. So
you know what?
Even when they know, they don't care.
Using that term right here, gun violence. We don't talk about car violence, even though a lot
right.
of people die from cars. In fact, here in Philadelphia, they just caught two guys, and then they weren't illegal, but these two guys carjacked a woman. They were in the midst of sexually assaulting her, lost control of the car, plowed into people in a park, killed two children. Okay? And that's car violence. So they're not talking about getting rid of the cars. They are talking about getting rid of the guns. And I'll tell you what, somebody, I don't care who they are or where they're from, somebody acts in a violent way toward you, then you have to protect yourself. And that's what it's about. It's protecting yourself, protecting your family, protecting your community, protecting your country. Listen, folks out there, we don't have to take this. And getting something done in Washington, well, it may be easier if we do our job in the fall elections and put in as many patriots as we can, people who, I'm not saying which party, I don't care, although it's mostly the Republicans that have the insurgent liberty movement going on right now, but there's actually a few in the honest left who are trying, and I wish them luck too. Get rid of as many of these cronies as possible. Maybe we can do something on a national level, but we can do something in L.A. County or in Schuylkill County where I'm from, or in Northampton County right now, down in the Lehigh Valley, people have heard of Allentown, Pennsylvania. It's a big, big place. Palmer Township, which is near Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, Christmas City. And the district attorney is calling for illegals to get driver's licenses. And this is happening all over the place. Why?
Ridiculous.
And there's not enough uproar. So in terms of nullification, you'd be surprised, folks, just how much power that you have. We don't have the power to enforce immigration law on a local level or a state level. That is constitutionally, and we actually follow it, a federal matter. On the other hand, we do have the power to arrest people for federal crimes, and we do this all the time. There are federal drug laws, okay, and there are task force. There's a task force nearby here, and I know some of the cops who are on it, okay, who are working with the state police, who are working with its multi-jurisdictional district attorneys, and who are working with the FBI and the DEA to try and clean up, because you can't assume that some criminal is going, no matter where they're from, and we've got illegals. Look at Hazleton, Pennsylvania, and just look, put Hazleton, Pennsylvania in Google. That's 19 miles from me. You'll see a whole lot of stuff about illegal aliens. And we've been trying on a local level, and they keep fighting us in court. But you can do stuff. And you have to do local and multi-jurisdictional. The reason they're going after, as with a task force, the local drug pushers who are selling nasty stuff to our kids. I don't really care what adults do, but they're selling this stuff to our kids, is because they don't stay put. They move around. They do business with people in the next town, in the next county. And it's really important where you don't have jurisdiction that you have somebody on your task force that has it. Right now, we're working really, really hard in my township and in my county, and there are people doing that in the next county, in the county over, and you skip a county, there's another one doing it, and we're starting to band together and do this as a unified group. Now, what works, works. What the progressives did, the statists, it works. It works so far. And what we're doing is basically the same thing. It's regular political organizing, okay? That's right. You've got to be like President Obama, like our dear leader, be a political organizer. He is really good at that. And the only thing that we've got against us that makes our job a little harder in the short term is we are not allowed to lie. We cannot make stuff up. We cannot leave stuff out. We've got to tell the truth, even if it's an embarrassing truth, even if it's something that doesn't help, we've got to tell the truth. But in the long run, that's a really good thing. Folks, because, hey, I say something, and all of a sudden I'm a racist. I say something, all of a sudden I'm a sexist. I'm a bigot. I don't like children, whatever. Yeah, I get the difficulty. On the other hand, this only worked when things were going well in this country. And it was a gradual process of making this country broke, making this country broken. They broke this mm-hmm. country almost completely, bit by bit. And for many years, you would hear somebody who had woken up and done some research and said, whoa, look what's happening. Look what's happening. This is where it's going to lead. And people go look at their own lives, and they'd say, everybody I know is working. We're all making money. Nobody's coming and knocking on our door. Nobody's bothering us. And they'd ignore it. And then these stories started coming out, things like poor Jazz getting shot, okay? Stories like that SWAT teams going into a farm because they're selling raw milk. They just had a Homeland Security SWAT team go to a person's house because they bought a 30-year-old Land Rover car that no longer is up to current inspection standards for emissions, and they came with freaking machine guns. People get woken up when they see these things in the alternate press. But now, I defy you to find a family that doesn't have somebody unemployed. Look, I'm not going to mention names because it's their privacy, but I will tell you, my family, I'm the least successful person, okay? I never cared that much about money. I did okay at one point. I make 40 grand a year. Before taxes, before expenses, I'm struggling paycheck to paycheck, and I'm glad to be working. There are people in my family who have played the game the right way, and who have good money coming in. They're doing well. They own businesses. They're educated. They teach. They're lawyers. You know, et cetera. Good for them. And in our family, we have somebody, actually more than one person, who's long-term unemployed through no fault of their own. Really good, hardworking people with great work histories, they can't find a job. It's beginning to hit home. Every single person I know just about knows somebody who is the victim of a violent crime, and more, especially if you live in cities, but it's coming to a small town near you, you drive down the street, you get out of your car, and you're listening to people who didn't come here to speak English like my Polish grandmother did, learned English with an accent. You're listening to people who refuse to pay attention to the way things are in America, who refuse to want to try and fit in, whose children are raised not to fit in, okay? And, look, I have a friend who is Italian-American. Family's been here quite a while. They're very much Italian-Americans, but they're Americans. And I'm glad they came here and brought all those wonderful things of the Italian culture. We got the French, we got the English, we got the Germans, we have people coming over. Wherever you're from Ghana, you're from Belgium, you're from, Peru, you're from, Vietnam. Bring your food, bring your words to add to the English language, bring some really cool ideas, some new ways of looking at things, some new, fashions. This is part of what's supposed to happen, the American melting pot. This makes us stronger, the best of every nation. And leave that junk behind. That's why you came here, because you didn't want that junk. And we've got people coming over. And by the way, folks, it's not just Spanish people coming across that border. It's documented. It's proven.
Oh, yeah.
We've got Pakistanis coming over from the border. We've got jihadists.
Serious.
Quite possibly coming over the border. And people coming over the border illegally. This is not somebody who is coming here to get an education and says, wow, this is a great country. I can speak freely. I can worship any way I want to. Put me down on the list. I want to do everything right and become an American. Those folks are great. Those folks are fine. I'm happy with those folks. These are people sneaking in and getting on the dole. And we can't afford it. And if somebody's going to claim refugee status, they better be a real where it's
exactly.
Not just, oh, it's
yeah,
a
we're
little...
not the world's refugee camp.
No, we're not.
And at this time, Dan, I want to bring it back to you, Althea, and then our analyst, Kelly Mordecai, is on the line, and he'd like to chime in. So go ahead, Althea, and then we'll bring in Kelly.
Okay. I just wanted to add, and say that when the politicians say, well, the city can't do anything about the illegal immigration and about illegals being here, that it's a federal, that the federal should do it, that's another scam also, because in the city of Los Angeles, they were against the federal government doing anything. They had Special Order 40. If you Google it, Special Order 40 was the law that they put in place, so the police can't ask people that they pull over if they're in the country illegally, because they kept on pouncing on the fact that it's federal. So what the federal do, they came up with 287G. That's for the federal. So now, right now, the same politician that said it's federal, now they don't want the federal to do it. They don't want 287G to be implemented anymore. And if you Google that, you'll see they're fighting against it. So they basically, they hide behind saying it's local should do it because they know the local won't do it. And then once locals start, they say, no, it's federal because they don't want it done. So between Special Order 40 in Los Angeles, California, and the 287G that the federal government is supposed to work with the local police, they stopped that out here too.
That's because it's a sanctuary city, just like Philadelphia, San Francisco, Atlanta, Georgia, Los Angeles. You're right out there. And Kelly will know more about what the Constitution actually says that we can do.
Okay.
Yep, and now we'll be bringing Kelly in, and this is our resident constitutional scholar. And thank you very much, Kelly, for calling into the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing all right, and I first just want to express my deep, sincere sympathies for the loss of your nephew, and I'm sure it has been very hard on you and very hard as well on your brother.
Thank you.
I just couldn't. I dearly love my son, and I don't know. I think I'd go crazy. So I just at least wanted to.
Thank you.
With you. Yeah. I'm kind of stunned too, because I've been listening from the beginning of trying to multitask, but I am a little bit stunned and even ashamed of other Americans who have used the situation for political gain, or they put their party above justice, and it is absolutely disgusting. You know, the Democrats seem to, oh, you're with those guys now. It's like, look, somebody was murdered. There is Jim Garrison was the district attorney in Dallas that was trying to go after JFK's assassin. And he was being crucified by the media. And finally he said one day, you know what? Let justice be done, though the heavens fall. In Latin, that is something I have up on my wall. It's fiat justitia ruat calium, which is let justice be done, though the heavens fall. And justice far supersedes any type of political party or political affiliation or, I don't know, is our Congress being run by junior high people? Is our state legislature being, I don't know how else to put it. It's like, this is junior high crap. I don't know what to say. I'm glad you are continuing in your efforts. There's actually somebody I would like to connect you with. Is a really sharp, amazing lady in Florida.
Okay.
And she pointed this out to me, and I think you and her working together could have a really strong impact.
Wonderful.
Yeah, she is working on immigration. She has represented to me, and maybe she's got it passed by now in Michigan. But our Constitution, the way it was set up, the states are in charge of immigration.
Mm.
Yeah, and she explained that to me, and she here it is right here. It's in Article 1, Section 9. No, I'm sorry, is it Article 1? Yeah, Article 1. Article 1, Section 9. Now, you got to throw out the heading. Absolutely throw out the heading, because that has absolutely nothing. That heading was never there when they wrote the Constitution. Somebody threw that in for influence. Okay? But what it says in Article 1, Section 9, the heading, the wrong heading, is slave trade. Okay? It's like, no, it didn't. That was nothing to do with anything, with the origin. All right. Article 1, Section 9, the migration or importation of such persons as any other states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by the Congress. And there are other sections that she pointed out to me that the states were the ones in charge of immigration. And she can get Michigan to establish an immigration office in Michigan. She's working on this in Florida. And how it happened was that if you wanted to host somebody who was a foreigner, right, you would go to the State Department of Immigration. I want to host this person I've been writing with, you know, maybe their family, maybe their cousins, what have you. But for about 5 years, you were highly responsible for that person you brought in from another country. And at the end of those 5 years, you'd have a review, of course, see if they got their green card. Are they a decent person? Are they a good person? Yes or no? Well, you've got a person responsible for them. You better believe that we would get the cream of the crop. And if somebody's cousin, yeah, hey, you know, he's in love. He's doing great. He's trying to become an American. He's got a great job. You know, I think we ought to let him in. I have watched him for 5 years. You know, or somebody back from your village or wherever it was. Okay, so the states would do this, and the states would say, okay, you're now a citizen of, say, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Michigan, wherever. The federal government has, once again, usurped the power that it's a federal system now. No, it's not. They have done this because they're trying to gain votes. I mean, that's kind of the obvious, duh. Both parties are guilty. So I can hook you up. I know your number is on the Bard's Logic. I can call you later. But I think your cause would be benefited, if you will. your cause would be benefited by hooking up with this lady, and I'm sure she's heard a few stories, but you have become painfully aware of this scenario. And other people, I'm sure, it's kind of strange, even the homeless people congregate. I'm a member of the local homeless committee, and they somehow these homeless, I don't know how they network, but they do. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, people, whatever groups, whatever interests, they find each other. And if you can hook up with Ms. Jackson, who dearly loves the Constitution, but she, I think you and her approach, I think you can have a really good effect, and it may not happen on the federal level, but maybe state by state.
Yes.
To help your cause there.
Yes, that's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, so I do have a question for you, though. Do you feel, well, I know L.A. is kind of a really difficult area, but going through all this, how do you feel about gun control now?
Well, I feel the same way I felt before it happened. I feel, you know, I wish my nephew had a gun. I mean, I feel like as Americans, they want to release the gang members on the street. Release, because they're doing the same thing they did when they released him the night of my nephew. They want to release the criminals. They don't want to enforce the law. They don't want to secure our borders. The court, California, voted against the illegals. They overrode that and did what they want, and now they want to take the guns. I mean, I don't even understand that, but, you know, I believe that as Americans, if you don't want a gun, don't get a gun, but don't act like something's wrong with people if they want to defend themselves, especially in the city of Los Angeles. I think last year, the city attorney now sent out a letter saying, these are the crimes we're not going to even enforce no more. Don't even call the police if somebody's on your property. None of that. So at the end of the day, the people are going to have to defend their home. So, you know, I feel the same way I felt before he was murdered. You know, I'm not one of those that said, well, I voted for Obama. I didn't, because I was listening in 2008, and I heard him say he was going to give amnesty and all that crap. So, you know, the Democrats have been behind guns, even when I was a Democrat years ago. I still felt like people have a right to defend themselves, you know, so I'm just more passionate now to the point that, you know, I just wish my nephew had one. I mean, I really do. I mean, he could at least put up a fight when the guy going to run up to him and say, where are you from? But we can't even ask them where they're from. So, you know, I just...
Yeah.
Thank you for the question.
There is a story. Yeah, well, it's kind of sensitive that I'm like, well, let's see, but I'm glad to see that there was this, I don't know where it was, maybe Arizona or Texas, but there was this girl out in the farm somewhere, and two illegals busted into her house. She ran upstairs real quick, grabbed her 12-gauge shotgun. As they were coming up the stairs, she shot one dead, and then his friend retaliated and tried to come after her harder, and she shot him dead too. She called up the sheriff and said, hey, two guys broke in my house and they're both dead now. What happened, honey? They shot him. The police came out and said, well, they're in your house, self-defense, you're 12. You know, we're not even going to do anything. This is self-defense. Come to find out the girl was local champion trap shooter.
Wow.
You know, clay pigeons and stuff. And there are so many more stories of people who are alive now because of guns. You got about if you get shot, there's a 10% chance you're going to die, but obviously in your nephew's situation. How's your brother holding up, by the way?
Well, you know, it's still sad. Sometimes people think get over it. But my brother, when he became a father, he was so happy. I mean, just his face. all of our family just saw it with so much love that he had that, you know, it just was really scary because my brother was a quiet person. Before this happened, he was the type that if you talk loud, he'd be like, be quiet, you know, I don't want people to hear. But it's like he's the opposite now, and that's one of the reasons why we have the radio show on Sunday nights at 9 p.m., because he was holding so much anger in, we just felt that he needed to release it. So he's still mad with, he calls himself Pissed Off Dad, and also on PopModal, M-O-D-A-L, .com, if you put / Pissed Off Dad, you can see some of the interviews that he had. He has a video of my nephew when he was, he used to video his games and practice and stuff, and he put this piece together, and he's cursing on there, and he'll say, like, you know, people sometimes get so mad if I say a bad word, but they don't get mad about the fact that my son was murdered, you know, and then to add on that by a gang member who wasn't supposed to be here. And so, you know, all of this, it really helps him, so we had to, you know, use the show for him to vent, but he's still angry and mad and, you know, just get really mad at the politicians that, you know, they don't call and try to ask us, what do you think about us releasing some more illegals out in the community? You think that's a good idea? So, you know, but he's learning how to use his anger for good purposes.
Yeah, I would be in an absolute tailspin. My son is 8, and he's got top scoring in the reading exam in first grade, second grade. He won a writing contest. He won $20. And I go, hey, what are you going to spend your $20 on? Oh, I don't know what I'm going to spend it on. You know, he jokes around like me, and kids like him, and it's such a joy to see him grow. And I've had to, my wife left, you know, I don't know, was it 10 years ago, but 9 years ago. Anyway, but I've been there for him, and seeing him grow and seeing him, wait a minute, is that right? Yeah, 9 years ago. Yeah, she was pregnant when she left. But anyway, but just seeing him grow, seeing him and being there for him and just enjoying each other, he's just off to a really good start. I just, you know, I'm kind of stuck in a small town. I don't make much money, even though I'm an engineer. But, you know, I go somewhere else. But, you know, it's such a joy. And just to see how other kids interact with him, and they just like him, and he looks at me like, yeah, these people keep coming up to me. I said, yeah, I don't know what it is, son. Yeah, they just like you. You know, it would just be, I don't know. I don't know how I could get up the next day or two if something bad happened to them. But, you know, it's just, having kids absolutely changes a person. Mm-hmm. It really changed me.
Well,
so.
It did me.
Yeah.
I know my brother, he has another son, Thomas, who is now in the 10th grade. Now, he's at L.A. High. And so my brother was saying that before, when Jazz was born, I was raising him. You know, I was, you know, just really there for everything. He said, now I just feel like I'm just trying to keep Thomas alive. And so he said it just feels so different. Because, you know, when you have your child murdered and then you're right there and you see it, you know, when people would try to get my brother, like, you know, don't try to, you know, talk so hard about the people here illegally and all that, he'll often say, you know, what would you do if your son or your daughter was murdered or somebody you love, what would you do? And a lot of times they, you know, because they don't want to think about it. I don't even want people to think about it because, you know, because the last thing you want to think about is somebody who you love laying on the ground, their head wide open. You know, you don't want to think about that. And so when he tell them, you know, what would you do, then they kind of stand off and say, yeah, you're right, you know, I don't know. So, you know, he uses it now good, but he still cries. You know, he still, and I mean, I can count on one hand other than the time when he was bad as a little boy, he got spanking, but you know, he just was not a crying, you know, he's like boys don't cry kind of thing. But, you know, he still cries all the time, his eyes like swollen, you know, because he's still hurting. He still don't even believe it. A lot of times he just don't even believe it. It's like, you know, Jazz is dead. I don't even believe it. So, but thank God he talks it out so he don't hold it in like he used to. So that helps us anyway.
You know what?
Thank you so much. We, you know, really appreciate it, and we definitely would be open to you giving the number out. So, you know, we really appreciate that, your support. Thank you very much.
No, sure.
And I want to bring them up later about the show as well, because you guys, about your Blog Talk Radio show. But go ahead, Dan.
Althea, I can't imagine the insensitivity. Well, no, I can. Of people to actually ask somebody who lost a child, you're not supposed to outlive your child, to get over it. They would say get over it to someone who lost their child, even if it was to a horrible illness or just a car accident. That is the height of insensitivity. Listen, folks, what is it going to take? Is it going to take the loss of life? Is it going to take the loss of a loved one before you get active politically? You do not have to run for office, as Althea has done, as so many people we've had guests on this show. If you can do it, that's great, and more power to you. You could support somebody who is. You could go out there with, like, James Neighbor's group, the Overpasses for America, that was working with Make Them Listen in that huge protest that was going on and still going on across the country against illegal immigration. You can't make a sign. You can't hold a flag. You can't stand there with some Gatorade in your hand and a sun hat on an overpass for a couple of hours. You can't sign a petition. You can't do anything. Folks, I know some of you are very, very active, and I'm very grateful for that. And some of you are listening, and you know it, and you go, well, you know, somebody else will do. I don't know how effective. It's doomed. And it's not doomed. Yes, we're fighting a large number of battles. Illegal immigration, too much regular immigration, unvetted immigration, violence, period. The society under the status has been degraded, as Althea was saying, to the point where churches have very little sway, and they've given away their moral imperative, the high ground, because they're no longer saying anything about morality. Oh, you know, I don't want to say anything about morality. There might be somebody in the congregation who's going to take offense. Oh, I don't want to say anything about politics, for God's sakes, because we could lose our nonprofit status. And then, you know, how are they going to pay my salary? Or how are we going to fix up the rectory? Look, right now, there's stuff you can do, and there's stuff going on. And these are big, big stories. You cannot miss it. Althea, I'm just curious. There's a bunch of illegal alien crime victims who have invited Speaker John Boehner to go down to the border. Are you affiliated with, do you know any of those folks?
Yes, we do. Our name is on the list also. We know pretty much all of them. We've met Don Rosenberg. My brother did a press conference with Laura Wilkerson. And who else was that? Yeah, we definitely know them. Maria Espinoza, she's one of the people. She has a program called the RememberanceProject.org, and she's a part of the Stolen Lives Quilt. She contacted us some years ago, and her organization, one of the ones that wrote the letter and asked us if we would be a part of that. So, you know, we'll see if Boehner is going to come out to the border, because we know Obama, he didn't come, even when he was right there, he didn't come down. And a lot of these politicians, they just don't want to come in the faces of, you know, Americans who, you know, I mean, I still love this country because it's bigger than how they treated us. But it's like, you know, when they treat people who love America like this, and then they bow down to people who've been here 20, 30 years and still won't even speak English, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about speaking English. Like I said, I grew up in Philly, and I happen to be a native Ebonic speaker, among other, you know, English, because that's what we spoke. You know, it's fine. And I love when I hear President Obama, our dear leader. This is a fellow, regardless of where he may or may not have been born, there's some real debate about it, because just like his records from just about everything, you know, his school, college records, everything, it's all under seal. But let's assume he was born here. Let's assume he's legitimately the president. I don't know. But I love the fact that he grew up during his formative years when I was on a blacktop playground in Mount Airy and Germantown in Philadelphia listening Motown, listening to the Beatles, you know, watching the moon landing, going, you know, we're Americans. He grew up in Indonesia, speaking English as a second language, where his mom had to tutor him. And yet he slips into this, not that great, but it's passable, Ebonic slang or whatever, this kind of sound, like he actually grew up here and it's his native way of speaking. And he says, hey, and he said this today, he says, stop hating all the time. You got to stop hating. I mean, like, come on. You know, who the heck is he fooling? You want to know the way things are right now? Look at October 13th of last year, and just 2 days ago on July 28th, there were protests at the White House, both days, and they weren't violent protests. The one that happened 2 days ago was illegals. They were all illegal. They were all subject to arrest. They're at the White House. They're protesting. The White House did nothing at all, peaceful as you can imagine. Then there was another group of peaceful people who had actually sworn an extra oath, just like, I believe it's your niece, I'm not really sure, and I should know, who's in the military. But they swore an extra oath. Sister, okay, yeah. She signed a blank check to America. She didn't say, I'm in favor of fighting in Afghanistan or any other place. She didn't have any say in that. She said, where you need me, I will go. What you tell me to do to serve this country, I will do. When my brother and sister in arms is fighting, I'm there by their side. Now, there were veterans protesting at the fact that they're being shut out of the memorials, that all veteran services were shut down when they had this sequester last year, which Obama chose to use to shut down certain facets of the government to punish the people who believe in America. When he could have shut down any number of non-essential things that nobody would even miss. They did shut down the Department of Energy for like 10, 12 days. I guarantee you, nobody except some lawyers missed it one bit, and some environmentalists, not conservationists. I'm going to make that clear. Robert is a conservationist. I believe in conservation. I don't believe in this nonsense that they're talking about.
Hey, Dan, this kind of brings up a topic.
Go ahead, Kelly.
If you will. And I just want to ask Ms. Shaw if...
Real quick, gentlemen, let me interrupt for a few moments just to let the listeners know that in about 12 minutes, their audio will stop, even though the show will continue. That means because the live portion of the show, while the extended period is still live, it is not something that is heard on the audio. But, of course, the remainder of the show could be heard on the podcast. So if you'd like to listen in to the extended version or even to chime in as well, give us a call at 347-945-7428. But I will do that in the next 11 minutes now, because if you don't, you will lose the audio. So give us a call at 347-945-7428. And if you'd like to chime in, just press the 1 on your number dial. Thank you, gentlemen and ladies. Go ahead.
Kelly, before you ask Althea the question, I just wanted to complete the one point, which is that when the veterans were protesting last October 13th, peaceful guys and gals who, you know, did all that in service of our country, Obama sent out the riot police. Riot police for veterans, but not for illegals. Go ahead, Kelly.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, yeah, that really brings up the point that I want to ask Ms. Shaw if she sees a bigger picture going on in the country overall. Just what do you see a bigger picture, something, I want to call it clandestine or a little bit spooky. What's your big picture view of what's going on here?
Well, in my opinion, I just believe this is coming down to good versus evil. I feel like it's just so sad when you're driving down the street, you see like these candles, and you know that means that someone was murdered. It didn't make the news, you didn't hear about it or anything, and then they just come up, pick up the candles, and just keep it moving, and it just seems like they don't really care about life. And to me, I just see this as like evil, and you know, I don't know about people who, you know, if they don't believe in that, because I was talking to this one guy. He was saying, well, I'm an atheist, so, you know, I don't even believe in that. I said, but do you believe that bad things are happening? Because, I just never know from an atheist standpoint. He was saying, yeah, I do believe that, but I don't know if, I mean, I don't believe that God and then there's a devil and all that, but I really do believe that evil is running rapid, and people who believe, I just think we need to, like, come together and kind of work together, because it's just a high level of evil, I think, is going on, especially in Los Angeles. And, you know, that really irritates me a lot, because I think here we are, the city of angels, and we've allowed a sanctuary city, and, you know, they've taken the Bible out to schools and, you know, just put all kind of stuff back in the schools. So I personally believe this. I wasn't always a person that read the Bible. I wasn't raised up in the church. I used to see my grandmother reading the Bible, but my parents didn't bring us up in the church. And so, you know, I have a sister that later married a pastor, and as an adult, I started reading the Bible, and I just started liking the Bible stories, and just I would just really feel good when I would read the Bible stories and just feel like, you know, we as believers, people who are following God, we should at least have some kind of power. But it just seems like the church is helping the destruction of the country. I mean, it just really...
Yeah, I don't get that.
I don't get that
either. It's simple, folks.
Well,
no, it's very simple.
Let me throw some things out to you. Let me throw some things out. Somebody you want to talk to?
Yeah, Kelly, and then James. Not James. Dana, that you want to bring some up on her comments, and
yeah.
I would like to as well.
So
Kelly,
okay,
Dan, and...
Well, I have been wondering for a while regarding church, regarding seminaries, if there are evil men that appear spiritual and a certain weird doctrine gets in. The Apostle Paul warned about false teachers. Of course, Christ did too. So did Jude. So did Peter. So did, I think, James did too. The warnings are all over. You know, and again, in Revelations, Christ said, hey, watch out for some of these people. They are just wicked. They will infiltrate. So I'm beginning to wonder if that's happening in the church, and you kind of went a bigger picture than I was kind of wanting to address, if you will, but you got the most biggest important picture. But I also see in our government the Cloward-Piven plan, which a couple socialists, which, you know, Obama is. Basically, the plan is overwhelm a country in any way possible to where it comes into economic ruin. And then from the ashes, you can have this amazing socialist world, which isn't, I mean, you know, I've told people that, yeah, socialism really does work. I mean, it actually does in real life. When Stalin and Lenin killed 20 million people, after that, there's plenty of food, housing, and clothing to go around. So it does work.
Huh.
Yeah, it's kind of a joke. But Mao did the same thing, you know. Yeah, plenty of food, housing, and clothing to go around when you kill 40 million people. But it is a very, the government level, these jokers, the leftist socialists, they have been at this for decades very tenaciously, and they have deeply hurt the family. You know, the families are breaking up. The economy with inflation and printing money out of thin air has deeply hurt the family. So many things that have hurt the core unit of our society, of our great republic, is under attack left and right and left and right. It is all being driven, I believe, by evil spiritual forces.
Mm-hmm.
Are you catching some of the government? Some people are shocked, like, oh, I was like, no, this is, they planned this. We all complain, oh, the government's so stupid. No, they planned it. And they expect us to think they're stupid, and then that way they get away with it. No, they're planning it. They're planning our destruction, slowly, methodologically.
Listen, this is
ahead,
something I always try really hard, because I may be people think I'm a smart guy. I think I'm a really simple person. I get confused. And
Simply
so I don't know. I study stuff, and I try and figure out first of all, what is the very, very basic stuff, the most, what's the simplest possible, and it helps in explaining things, the simplest possible terms I can express whatever it is in. And we build from there. Now, are there evil forces? Is there a God? I believe there's a God, and I think there is evil. But it doesn't require that for us to get what we're, where we're at now. Are the churches corrupt? Absolutely. Have they ever not been corrupt? Some have been corrupt, some haven't. There's been corruption throughout history. People in power tend to be corrupted. And people who want power tend to do corrupting things to get there. Whether it's you know, a church or a civic organization or a business or anything else. And there are plenty of good people as well who resist the temptation and who have a higher standard for themselves. Whether that comes from religion, and it does in many cases, or it comes from just a good upbringing or a thought of, gee, would I want someone to do that to me? The golden mean. Would I really want someone to treat me the way I'm tempted to treat this person to get personal advantage? So regardless of whether there are, because you're going to get people who are atheists saying, I don't know, and you know, good, evil. What's good for people? Is it good to harm a young person, a child? Certainly not. Is it good to take the life of a very, very well-behaved, intelligent, athletic young man who's doing nothing wrong and everything right and who holds so much promise? Is that good for him? No. Is it good for his family? No. For his community? For his school? For America? Absolutely not. So there's no argument. Now, you talk about Cloward and Piven, and you talk about the tactic of slowly overwhelming us and the fact that they've taken well over 100 years to get here. The reason they took this time and the reason it's not going to take us that much time, we're either going to win it or lose it very, very, very short time from now, and I don't think we're going to lose. That doesn't mean that you can sit back, folks, because the reason I think this is because I think you're going to step up and get involved. We're going to allow them. This is my tactic. Allow them to continue to do these outrages. The only thing that Obama has, the only thing that the federal government has, or all the local governments have, is control of the local governments. But they don't really have a whole lot of control for two reasons. First of all, the numbers of people in government are relatively low compared to the rest of us, even though there's too many people in government. Secondly, many of the people who work in government are not in favor of these things. So they're not actively, they'll do what they have to do, bare minimum. They, when it comes to doing wrong stuff, they won't participate. Okay? Some say no. And there are people within the government who are actively trying to change things for the better. And we've got to get those people moved up the ranks. You all know them. In your local municipalities, you know that one troublemaker, that one honest guy or gal, that one person who's out there who continually goes against corruption. You've got to move them up the ranks, because if you've looked at them, if they've been in a few years and you can see that they really know what they're doing, they can't be left to languish in a backwater. You've got to get those people into your state house in Sacramento or in Harrisburg or wherever you happen to be. And you've got to get those people. We've got a couple of really good ones amidst all the corrupt people in Harrisburg, which is our state capital. I'd like to see them in Washington, okay? Let the people in charge continue to do these provocations, these outrages, because what it's doing every single day is waking more people up, and the people who are not asleep, who are already awake, it's making them more active. They get angrier and angrier, and just like your brother out there, they can't, just like yourself, they can't just sit there anymore. They get involved and start doing stuff. Maybe, folks, you'll end up with your own radio show or being a guest on a radio show. Maybe you'll be running for office. Maybe you'll just be a part of that and a vital part of that. Not everybody during the Revolutionary War signed the Declaration. Not everybody served in combat. Not everybody was George Washington. Without followers, George Washington would not have been George Washington. Now, here's what's happening in the near-term future. Gutierrez, Henry Gutierrez, who's I believe he's from out in California. I'm trying to think. Is he from Texas? I'll find out while I'm talking. He has said that Obama is going to act broadly and generously and has actually given numbers. He's saying about 5 to 6 million illegals, they're just not going to enforce it. They're going to cease enforcement, which is de facto an amnesty. And he's going to do it after Labor Day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is perfect timing, folks. All that talk you've been hearing about impeachment is coming from the Democrats. They want the impeachment to happen now. There's not enough time for it to happen before the election. And remember, impeachment is not conviction. It's merely an indictment, a presentment of probable cause that this person should hold trial, okay, just like a preliminary hearing, and the trial happens in the Senate. If they did manage to impeach the occupant of the occupier of the White House right now, if they did it in a month, it'll go to the Senate and won't go anywhere. And after the term ends, which is going to happen in January on the 20th, I believe, 19th or 20th, there is no more chance because they'd have to start over again. You lose your political momentum. So I say let them do all the things they possibly can. Let them, you know, support the terrorists. I mean, these are not easy things to do, but let them show their true colors, just how bad they are. Pelosi and Reid and Gutierrez and the rest of them, who, by the way, is a congressman from Illinois, Luis Gutierrez. Let them show how bad they are so we can vote them out, hold the line in 2014, start to take things back. And if he actually does this, one of the pundits out there, I don't listen to most of them, but and I don't agree with this guy all the time, but he may be one of the brightest out there, Charles Krauthammer, and he's on every network. He says that it's clearly an impeachable offense. We have several other constitutional scholars who, Kelly, even you would say they really know their stuff, and they have all said that this guy has already crossed the line, and if he crosses the line in a big enough way, it can happen. The thing about it is what he's trying to do is push us faster and faster. And the reason is not because he's got hubris, not because he's bold and shameless. Sure, he's all those things. He's and maybe a lot more. I'm not too certain that he's not crazy in some way. But he and the rest of them are actually scared. They're really, really scared. They're this close to what they've been working for over a century, to ruling us, to turning America, fundamentally transforming it into a dictatorship, a kingdom, call it what you will, where they have everything, you have nothing. They want power. They're that close. They can taste it, and we're waking up. And we're waking up so fast. You won't see this on the national news, but it's happening. It's happening everywhere. And they are scared that if we wake up fast enough and decide we're going to take our power back quick enough and strong enough, they're going to be done for generations. Nobody's even going to pay any attention to their ideas until people start falling asleep again, and that's going to take some time. So that's why they're pushing this. Let them push it. And get involved, folks. And you can't wait. If you're thinking about this is wrong, go talk to people and ask them what's right about this country right now. Are we in the right direction? And if they say, no, we're not, it's not right, get them to do something. There's so many things you can do. And who knew that it would be illegal immigration that would be the fundamental game changer in this? We've had so many outrages. Common Core outraged all these moms, and we got closer to taking back power. And these SWAT raids and the brutalization that the standing army that they've turned our police forces into, and giving them tanks and buying up all these millions of rounds of ammunition and supporting our enemies overseas and hurting our friends. And it's not just Israel. I mean, they're really, really doing a number on all of our traditional allies. Look what they did to Poland, where my folks are from. One of the first things Obama did when he came into office was say, oh, you can't have a missile shield. Ukraine, you can't have the missile shield either. Now where are they? That missile shield would have prevented, quite possibly, an airliner with 300 people going down. But
they
are doing everything they can, and we don't know what's going to resonate. Each one of these things that comes up, you know, the abortion issue, the gun control issue, grabs a whole new segment of people, and they start working and working. But did anyone predict a year ago that illegal immigration was going to be the one where James Nabors' group, along with dozens of other groups, would get together and have a historic national protest with protests in hundreds and hundreds of places across the country simultaneously? Never happened before. Did anyone predict any of this stuff? So you don't know which one is going to be that game changer, that real. So work on the one you're doing. The one you're doing is worth it.
And Althea, we'll go ahead and leave the floor to you.
Well, thank you so much. I just get encouraged. You know, there's some times when living in a sanctuary city, sometimes you look around and you think, Lord, have we lost? Is it over? And then, you know, people who are sharing our story, and then, you know, just keeps the word going further. You know, it's very encouraging because, you know, you'd be surprised how you sometimes feel alone when you live in a sanctuary city. I mean, it's the hardest thing. I mean, I hate living in a sanctuary city. You know, we want to try to do something, but it's like even when you win, even when you come against the system through getting the signatures and then you get something on the ballot, then the courts just overturn it and change it, and it just gets frustrating. But, you know, we are going to be on Fridays on the overpass. So, you know, we are a part of that now also from 4 to 7 every Friday. And it's just things like that that gives us hope. And hopefully Boehner will get a backbone and, you know, start the impeachment process. Because I personally think that the Democrats are trying to bully him, and he's saying, well, impeachment is not on the table, don't worry about it, whatever. But they're just, you know, trying to bully him, because even though they say they're raising a lot of money, I just don't think that they really want him to do it. I really think that they know that if they do it, something could happen.
If we wait until after the elections and we're able to bolster the House, get rid of a bunch of the cronies and corruptocrats, and take back the Senate, then first thing in the new year, the new Senate and new Congress is sworn in, okay? It's a brand new session. They will have 2 full years to investigate. And they may choose to impeach. Remember, it's not just in the Nixon scandals. I don't know how old you are, and I don't ask a lady her age. I'm 53, and I cut my teeth on Watergate, all right? I was semi-aware of politics, but I was a young boy, and I was fascinated. They had this, just like I remember President Obama promised us with the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare is what they call it, that there'd be gavel-to-gavel coverage on CNN. And I was like, you know what? This is great, because I am not going to have to miss sleep. I can actually tape this, and I'm going to watch every single minute. That's how much of a geek I am, policy wonk. I love doing it. It drives my wife crazy. I'll sit there and put on C-SPAN or our local version of that on PCN and just watch a Supreme Court hearing in our Supreme Court here in Pennsylvania or a bunch of bills and you know, nobody's in the chambers except a couple of people, and they're just sitting there reading, and it's fascinating because this is our law. This is how it's made. This is what it's about. And then I'll call their offices and I'll tell them. So I'm watching Watergate as a kid, and I got my own money from my paperboy route. I bought the transcripts. People forget that Watergate woke a lot of people up to corrupt government. They also forget that Watergate resulted in hundreds of convictions. People who weren't convicted were turned out of office because nobody would stand them. There was a huge, huge uprising in this country, and it was against the corruption of the Republican Party. And today it could be the corruption of both parties. In fact, it's always been the corruption of both parties. But that's what we really need. We need a cleansing. Now, unfortunately, with Watergate, what happened was the people who took advantage of getting rid of a bad guy, and Richard Nixon may have been a good guy at one point, but as far as a president, he condoned illegal activity. He found out about it, and just like Clinton, when Clinton was asked about his affair with this young, impressionable intern, and he's the most powerful man in the world, and it was sleazy as all got, and he's a married guy, but all he had to say under oath was, yes, it happened, I'm really sorry, it's between my wife, myself, and that young lady, and, you know, hang his head, bite his lip, get that little quiver going, and people would have said they forgave him. Whether they did forgive him or not wouldn't have mattered because he wouldn't have committed a crime, okay? He couldn't have been impeached for telling the truth. Richard Nixon, when he found out about the Watergate break-in, the break-in to Daniel Ellsberg's office, he was a psychiatrist who got hold of all these papers in the Pentagon about these secret plans that were really not American. They were not right, and they were our government was doing it. Nasty stuff, assassinations, things like that. And he broke it to the New York Times. They were going after journalists just like they are today. When he found out about this stuff, had Richard Nixon said, I want your resignation on my desk in 20 minutes, and the next day or a couple of days later gone on television and said, I found some bad apples, and they're no longer part of my administration. I'm turning over all records to a prosecutor, and he would have been a hero. He would have been a hero for doing the right thing. We're going to do the right thing in this country, but we've got to do it in the right order, and we've got to make sure that unlike back in the early and mid-70s, we don't end up with this crisis where the wrong people take over. In the Middle East, there was crisis after crisis in all these countries, and unfortunately, the wrong people are taking over. It was bad to have Mubarak in Egypt. It was bad to have Gaddafi in Libya. These are bad guys, okay? It was bad to have the Shah of Iran. He was a bad guy. But the crisis happened, and instead of us being thoughtful and methodical and taking things step by step and thinking several steps ahead, being prepared, the ones who were prepared were the Muslim Brotherhood and ISIS and Al-Qaeda, evil men who now have a broad swath of territory and are murdering Christians and trying to murder Jews. Just because, and if you're an American, don't go there. If you're an American and you want to go for a tourist visit, you're putting your life in jeopardy. They want to kill you for no other reason. So we know this crisis is coming. This wave is about to crash on us. The country is going to be hurting really, really bad. What we're going through now is not even a pale shadow of what's going to come. And there's nothing we can do to prevent it. We deserve it, folks. God punishes people who for not being faithful. And if you don't believe in God or that kind of message, how about we've got this Titanic of a ship that's speeding for the rocks, and even if we take over the helm and start turning it right now, it takes an awful lot of time to turn a big ship, and we're going to hit the rocks. The economy is crashing. Despite the numbers you see, the unemployment there, oh, look, unemployment's low. It's not, and everyone knows it. We're in deep, deep stuff. But if we're careful about this, and if we see the opportunities, and if we prevent the other side from taking advantage of the crisis that they created, we can come out the other side of this in a relatively short time in control of the reins of government, and we can start dismantling the things it doesn't need to do, cleaning up the things it does need to do, becoming efficient, and allowing the American individual person, the entrepreneur, the person in their families and in their communities who has a new idea, allowing them, without a million regulations, to start rebuilding this country. And listen, everybody thinks it's going to take 100 years. I think that it's going to take, if we took back in 2014 both houses of Congress, and in 2016, the presidency. And we need all three. But if we did that, I think within 2 years, we'd be able to pair millions and millions of people off the public dole because there'd be millions of new jobs. And within 3 to 5 years, we'd be almost back where we were back in the Clinton era. And if we keep going, in 7 or 8 years, 1 or 2 presidents from now, we could be in a situation where America is the envy of the world, richer than ever, freer than ever, better than we ever were. Because let's face it, folks, those fantasies about happy days and American graffiti and how nice things were never perfect in America. They never were, and they never will be. But we kept improving, and I really think we could do something with this country. We've got some awesome people. And I'm talking too much again.
And let's go ahead and bring Althea in, and yeah, you've got the mic, then we'll bring it over to you, Kelly. And you know, I was multitasking myself, and I was going to bring up some comments, but I can't remember quite what they were. So perhaps I'll bring it back. So go ahead, Althea.
Well, I don't think you were talking too much. You're right. I mean, I also hope, you know, that, I mean, I just pray that California and America can rebound from this and just really get back on track. I guess the only concern I have is I just pray that if the Republicans take the Senate and hold the House, they don't do one of the things like when Obama told Putin, as soon as the election, I'll have more flexibility. I just hope it's not one of those things like as soon as we get the House, then we could pass this immigration reform. I just pray they don't turn on us. You know, that's my only concern. I just pray that if they get the House, get the Senate and hold on to the House.
It's a legitimate concern. It's a legitimate concern, Althea, because let's face it, most of the people are at the top in all of our organizations, in government and everywhere else, at the big ones. They're mostly corrupt. But here's the thing they've got to realize, because they're not stupid people. They don't have the power that they pretend to have. You've seen The Wizard of Oz. Everybody was scared of the great and powerful Oz, and it turns out it's a little man moving some levers behind a curtain. All right, and it looked this giant head with flashing lightning and smoke, and it looked really scary until that little dog Toto just pulled that curtain aside, and we saw it for what it really is. These folks have control, but they don't really have control unless we allow them to. I will remind everybody, the ultimate bad thing that can happen is warfare, and they don't want to push us into this. If they push us into this, they're going to lose. They know this. That's why they haven't. The reason they haven't opened FEMA camps, the reason they haven't started, going through neighborhoods, clearing them out, taking people away. I mean, the reason they haven't started going after people who appear on this show, who are real troublemakers, is because if they start doing these things, they're going to have to keep doing these things. And if they keep doing these things, they're going to have to fight. And they're going to find that most of their own troops won't fight for them. And that there are more of us. I'll remind everybody, I've done a little more research. Pennsylvania alone has more deer hunters armed with high-powered weapons who know how to use them. Many of them are veterans, than the entire federal establishment that's armed, including all branches of the military. I would like to add Michigan to that, because Michigan has just about as many as Pennsylvania, almost. We're still number one. Texas to that. And surprisingly to most people, California, even today, has a great number of armed, peaceful citizens. I'm active with militias, among other things, and I'm not with the crazy ones. There are a few. With the real sensible ones, they're just prepared to do what's required to uphold law. And they're the kind of people who like to be ready for things, you know, who if a storm happens, they their family's taken care of and they're helping out the neighbors. If there's a, you know, can't get through because of the snow, they'll bring you over baskets of food. You know, they've got a generator. They've got a water well. They know how to do stuff. They can fix things. Well, that's the kind of people who are involved with that. And it's good to be ready. Peace through strength. Peace through strength was not only Reagan's motto. Yeah, but it's a sensible thing. If you're strong, then bad guys and bullies stay away from you. If there's a neighborhood where everybody's armed, everybody's peaceful, everybody gets along, the gangbangers don't have a chance to establish a foothold. They start some stuff in there, and they get their asses, oh boy, I'm sorry, cursing out there, but they get their you-know-whats handed to them. And pretty soon, they'll go somewhere that's a lot easier. So they are not interested in doing this. If they betray us to a point where we have no other choice, they lose everything. Because if they're willing to go with us, and we get enough decent people in there who are with us, then we're in a situation that's not too bad. And they're in a situation where they can survive, keep most of their ill-gotten gains. Some of them will hold on to power by just changing their tune. They're still going to be really well off, okay? Mm-hmm. And if it comes down to the bad stuff, well, we all know what happened to Mussolini and any number of others. And they don't want to get hung from a lamppost and have everything confiscated from them, because there will be nothing left for them. If they start trouble, I swear, and I don't like to curse, and I don't like to take the Lord's name in vain, this is a promise. I swear to God that if they make this happen, they will pay with everything they have. There will be nothing left for them. The rulers, the ones who want to be in charge, will not only not be in charge of us, they won't be in charge of themselves. Their lives, their property will be forfeit in all regards. There will be nothing left for them. And that is a clear threat, okay? I know the establishment pays attention to this. I'm very careful with my words. I've just said it. Go ahead and act on it. And they won't.
Okay. We'll hold you to that now.
Speaking on that, let's go ahead and bring Kelly back in, and then we'll see. We got about, I'd say, 30 minutes, maybe a little less, before I'll have to start closing things out for tonight. But next week, we will have a couple guests on we've had in the past, especially in 2012, is we will have Floyd Whitley on, and we also will have Randy Stufflebean from the Constitution Party, and so we'll get some updates from them, and we'll also hear about fundraisers that they are working on, and also they'll be, I believe, at a state fair, so we'll also be hearing from some folks at the fair about the going on here in America. And then on the 20th, we have the founder of Oath Keepers, Steve Rhodes, so we're looking forward to having him on, and that is August the 20th. So we'll bring it over to you, Kelly, and then one thing before I do, Kelly, I think I remember what I was going to say, Althea, is I know you guys, now you do your show on Sunday evenings from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. West Coast time, correct?
Yes, yes. Every Sunday night, we started in 2010.
I'm sorry?
Yes, we started August 2010.
Okay, great. Well, what I'd like to, perhaps to discuss off-air is, if you'd like, is you're familiar with Blog Talk Radio. We have times here that are available on Bard's Logic. And what we could do, if this is something you'd be okay with or interested in, is that I can get your podcast, download the show, and then what I could do here on Bard's Logic, and I'll have to see what night would be the most feasible, where I could do a replay here on Bard's Logic of your show, of your Sunday night show, maybe like on a Tuesday or a Thursday evening. So those who access Bard's Logic of Political Talk will also have access to your show as well, by me doing a rebroadcast of it from the...
That's a great idea.
From the podcast.
Yes, very good idea. Yes, we love it. Very good
awesome.
Idea. Thank you for offering something like
that.
I would never have thought about that.
Okay, great. We'll talk off air, and I'll give you a call in the next couple of days, and we can get the logistics together for that.
Sounds good. Thank you, Robert. Appreciate that.
Well, you're welcome. And so, Kelly, as I promised, the mic is yours now. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Dan Gray, he was mentioning that, he's kind of some member of the militia, whatever, but not the crazy ones. He just hangs out with the crazy ones during Wednesday night on a certain radio talk show, but we won't mention Barge Logic.
It's Barge Logic After Dark now, guys. Go ahead.
It's Barge Logic After Dark. All right. Well, I am studying words of John Jay, and I am just utterly stunned. This guy, oh, my gosh. Oh, by the way, when was John Jay, this is another state sovereignty question, when was John Jay the first Chief Justice of the state of New York? 1776, 1777, or
1778?
It was 1777.
Oh, I was a year off.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. But that's just kind of a quickie. So New York became a state, obviously, in 76. They developed their own constitution. And then in 77, they had a court system. John Jay, this is what's stunning that I've discovered. Immediately when he developed the court, he convened a grand jury and he gave them a charge. Immediately. It was stunning. And by the way, Michelle, I wrote a book about the grand jury. Anyway, just a little thing that helped Great Britain last about 900 years. Just a little small thing, different from any other nation in modern history. All right, anyway, let's see here.
He was also the leading opponent of slavery in his time.
Yeah, he worked in New York to get rid of it, and he did.
Yes, he did.
So he is stunning, very profound Christian student of scriptures, and he even talked about God. It's so funny. He talked about God in his charge of the grand jury, you know. Or you take ACLU back to 1777, you'd be like, you can't say that to the grand jury. Get out of here. So let's see here. I am working on something. I need people's help. If you know a retired attorney, let me tell you why. We figured out how to get a petition to the federal grand jury, which is a problem. Which, by the way, Michelle, a grand jury is composed of everyday people that have the power to go and investigate government, indict them, and throw them out of office and in jail.
Right.
So, yeah, okay. So anyway, but I have formed a national organization. I got several members called GRIJA, Grand Independent Jury Association. I have two attorneys. One is going to talk about the power and independence of the grand jury. The other one is the right of petition. First Amendment right of petition is directed to a grand jury, by the way. Public schools will teach you that. The third YouTube video by another attorney, which I'm needing your help with, guys, if you know any retired attorney that loves the Constitution, wants a special unique project, basically I have found horrific evil in the United States Attorney Manual. On one hand, they say... The U.S. attorney, they're called USAs, are in charge of grand jury proceedings. Wait a minute. Grand jury was created to investigate the executive branch, and now you're sending somebody from the executive branch, the Department of Justice, the USA, to what? To advise the grand jury? This whole fox of cards in the henhouse. I have found in the U.S. attorney manual, the prosecutor runs the show. Who passed this? Who wrote this? Oh, that's right, the Justice Department. Wrote the U.S. Attorney Manual. Did Congress ever approve it? No. On the other hand, the U.S. Attorney Manual says you must remember that the grand jury is an independent body. So which is it? Oh, that's right. There are about 7 manipulative trips I have found, and what I need is an attorney who's willing to do a YouTube video and explain. I'll basically just got to read a document I'm putting together. Explain to grand juries, look, this U.S. attorney is from the executive branch, the branch you're supposed to be investigating. Here are his tricks. You watch it. Indict the son of a beep if you have to, because he's obstructing justice. That's one of the reasons why our system is broken. Anyway, so if any of you know a retired attorney that wants a significant, serious spotlight as well as just help. You know, for me on Facebook, send me their name. I need another attorney. I got two lined up already. I just need a third. So, and by the way, Ms. Shaw, in Siskiyou County, when the district attorney here, this is back in 1988, a bunch of kids were being abused. One of them was murdered. The district attorney did nothing. The grand jury here indicted the SOB. And malfeasance, misfeasance, derelict of duty. The grand jury hammered him. And that district attorney was, he got off the charges because of the good old boy network, but he never won his next election. A little something I can talk to you about possibly with some of the negligence going on down there that we can talk offline. But anyway, I'm calling for attorneys. Anybody knows any? I mean, people ask me sometimes, are you an attorney? I say, no, I'm honest. But
well, I've got an uncle that's an attorney, so he's a corporate attorney, I believe.
Okay, yeah, well, anyway, but basically, people don't listen to me. I mean, I give attorneys a test on the grand jury and the right petition, they fail. But very many people don't listen to me because, I'm not an attorney. All right, whatever, so I'm looking at you. Anybody knows one, please help.
What's your Facebook handle?
Kelly Z, like Zoo. Kelly Z Mordecai. M-O-R-D, you know, like the Hebrew Mordecai?
Yes.
Yeah.
Got it.
It's also, by the way, Hebrew for God holds my mortality. All right, anyway. When I get a minute, I'll call you maybe tonight or tomorrow and hook you up with Miss Jackson in Florida. And she is just a fireball. And I think the two of you can really make a difference in the cause you're on. I'm just glad you joined us tonight.
Me too. I really thank you so much for inviting me on, Robert. And I just appreciate you going to have our show airing. And, you know, we really appreciate your support.
Well, you're welcome, and let's hope we can get some of this into some politicians' ears, so they can wake up and do the right thing.
Amen.
I'll give you an example of a local politician who anyone locally would know who I'm talking about, but I won't mention his name and embarrass him. This is a pay raise. This is going back about 8 years, and they voted themselves a giant pay raise. And to make things nice, they didn't give it to the state employees, just to the legislature and their staff. And to make sure that they'd have a chance of keeping this, because we have a law in our Constitution that says you can't raise your own pay. You can only raise pay for a future, which, you know, with incumbents, you're raising it for yourself because 98% of them get elected. But they raised their own pay, and they also raised the judiciary's pay. So they paid off the judges. And the guy who I'm mentioning is my local, I won't even say his title, but he had a different title then, and he wrote the bill, and they passed it after midnight and hoped nobody would be paying attention. But this other fellow, who I will mention, he's a local patriot in Pennsylvania for many years, named Gene Stilp, got an inflatable giant pink pig. I mean, the thing is like the size of a bus, and he filled it with helium. And he kept taking it around to various places and with a small group of protesters. And boy, oh boy, they made a stink, the dancing pink pig for all the pork. Well, the judiciary got very embarrassed, and they said, you couldn't do this, no pay raise, but you can raise our pay. So they took the money, but they didn't allow the legislature to get the money. Now, the next election happens, and a lot of them were gone, but there were still plenty of them in there who had voted for it, and they were still embarrassed. So this guy, this local politician, who, by the way, I coached his kids, so he's a nice guy, but he's never done anything outside of politics. He gave his money. He said, look, I'm going to give it to charity. And others say, I'm not taking it. Okay. Well, it didn't take long for him to realize where his bread was buttered. And he liked the side it was buttered on because he's never really had much of a job outside of politics. That's what he's done his whole life. And so he is now one of the staunchest, at least on the surface of things, one of the staunchest allies of liberty in Pennsylvania. There's a property tax reform bill that is really big. It's a great bill to get rid of property taxes to support schools and several other really good things. And he is sponsoring him. He is gung-ho for it. He is 100% for it. Of course, he's still taking a lot of corrupt cash from the unions, and he's not really pushing this stuff too far. The guy wants to stay in office. Now, there's an awful lot of those people out there. You say, will the politicians do their jobs? They're going to do what's in their own best interest. And if what's in their own best interest is, A, as I said, avoiding losing everything by not provoking us too much, and B, keeping something, I mean, even if they're forced to retire, even if someone beats them in an election or they decide, geez, I'm going to lose, it would look bad, I'll just step down. Come on. They're going to get nice pensions, and they can walk around having everybody think they're nice, and they can use the term honorable in front of their name legally. Doesn't make them honorable. Just means they can call themselves that. And you know what happens. They did a good job. They carried the water for the corporate interests and all the other corrupt ones. So somebody's going to appoint them to a board of, you know, or, you know, a corporate governance thing or some little task force, and they'll make another $100,000 for that, doing a couple of weekends a month, if that. They really, really have a lot to look forward to if they're willing to go with what the people want. And no, I take that back. Not what they want. See, want is not a very strong emotion. People will work hard for want. They'll do a lot of bad things for want. The people in charge want to be our rulers. The people will do anything for need. Had your brother had the opportunity to be out on that street and save his son's life, he would have done anything because he needed to protect his son. We need to protect our children. We need our liberty. We need to have a government. This isn't want anymore. I don't just want this. It would be nice. Boy, wouldn't it be a good thing. This is not that. This is a must-have. And people who are in desperate straits, if you must have food for your child, if your child must be protected from a predator, if you must have work, you will do what it takes. And we will do what it takes. And if the politicians who are in there now are smart, like I said, they're not really that dumb. They're going to find a way to make that work for them, or they're going to really pay a consequence. Because if they're not honorable, let's face it, you know, I don't think it's ever going to happen that a regular guy like me or any of the folks on this show are ever going to be president. But if I was president, one of the first things I'd do is appoint independent counsels. And I'm not talking, having witch hunts. I'd tell them, look, I don't want you to look into every possible thing. Just try to get them on anything. If you don't find anything big, don't worry about the small stuff. We don't have time for that. But go after them, and I want to see if there's anything big. These are the ones that smell bad. These are the ones who have been the worst. Go look into their stuff because nobody has. And if you find anything big, you got full backing, full funding, full publicity, and take them down. We've done that in Pennsylvania. We recently had sharing a cell. This was just so awesome. The Speaker of the House of Representatives in Pennsylvania and the former Speaker of the House of Representatives in Pennsylvania. One was a Democrat. One was a Republican. And they were both convicted of using their office for political gain. It was beautiful. I mean, that warmed my heart. And they lost a lot of money. They're never going to get elected again. And nobody likes them. And they don't have influence, that thing they love the best. When they used to call people on the phone, people would pick up that phone. When they say, come and speak to me in my office, people would be there. I mean, they'd burn leather. They'd burn rubber to get there. Now, they call people, yeah, we'll get back to you. Nobody wants to be seen with them. Nobody wants to talk to them. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and Kelly would like to speak on that, but unfortunately his call dropped. And one of the things here, as you know, is that when you're in the extended version, or portion of the show that, unfortunately, when you're in that part of the show, you can't get back in. I used to do a three-way call but for, to bring people in that way, but recently when I've tried that, all it ends up doing is getting me kicked off, and unfortunately, if I get kicked off, then it kicks everybody off, and we certainly don't want to do that. Because we got about 20 minutes, maybe a little bit less, about 18 minutes left before the show was over, and even less time for me to have to start closing things out. So that being said, Althea, is there, if there's any you know, any parting words that you'd like to say, we've got plenty of time for those, or comments that you want people to you know, be aware of, and you know, maybe some of things you have going on now with Jamil's Law and what, where you're looking to the future, and if there's any particular other particular politicians you guys are looking to try to get their attention to help you out.
Well, we do have a blog that people can go to that will be posting things regularly to let everyone know what we're doing, and that blog is Jamil Shaw's blog at blogspot.com. And the name Jamiel Shaw's blog, and then we have JamilsLaw.com. That kind of lets people know what happened, kind of keeps them connected. We have our Facebook page on there, is Facebook.com Stopping Obama's Amnesty, and then we also have one with Jamil Shaw's family on Facebook. And basically, we're going to be starting again with Jamil's Law. We're going to start back having meetings and just seeing how many people are still in the fight, because people kind of get discouraged sometimes. And and so we're going to be organizing and stuff. You know, I was telling you last time I ran for city council in District 10, and there were six of us, and we came in third with little to no money and no experience. And when I was looking over the election, actually the incumbent won with a little over 9,000 votes. And there's over 115,000 registered voters just in District 10 alone. And so,
wow.
Yeah, isn't that something how, you know, they won with that? So we're hoping to, you know, just talk to people who don't normally vote and just just get out there again and try to take back our district and try to do everything that we can locally. And so I you know, just appreciate you inviting us on and just talking with Dan. It's very encouraging. And sometimes, you know, you think in terms of we have this big old problem and you just can't eat the elephant in one bite. And we just have to just keep on doing our part. And like even myself, when I get discouraged, I'll remind myself that the turtle won the race, even though he was slow, but he just kept moving and moving. And sometimes the Obamas and the Democrats, it seems like in some ways they've won by cheating because they haven't done anything fair. I don't even see how they feel good about it. But in spite of that, they still haven't been able to break the country. I mean, they have hurt us tremendously, but it's all with executive order and cheating and fraud and corruption. And so, you know, when I look at that, I just remind myself, you know, just keep moving forward in spite of how it looks. So, you know, I'm glad to have met you all, and we'll be listening weekly, and it's just good to know that you have your show and you're reaching out and you're helping people and you're making a difference, and I'm glad that we met. And the last thing I want to say is as
me
sad,
too.
Huh?
No, I said me too.
I'm sorry. Oh, thank you. And,
you
know, just to think that my nephew was murdered and then we have met some of the nicest people, and we're not even supposed to know these people. As far as if this person wasn't in the country to murder my nephew, you know, we've met some of the nicest people, and the only reason I know them is because of the murder of my nephew. And it just so it's hard to explain, but it's like, you know, you have a bad thing that happened, then you meet all these good people. And it's like, well, Lord, you know, do we have to go through this just to meet all these people? And so you never know why things happen, but I'm just blessed that we've met such good people. And, you know, and I thank you for giving us the time to, you know, talk about it. I really feel good inside because sometimes, you know, I don't talk about the story and what happens, but I really feel like I needed it. So thank you. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. And then it was great that you were able to catch that Twitter that someone put out and be able to bring you on when we were covering the protest against illegal immigration.
I know. That was a blessing. I'm glad.
Okay. Well,
you know,
we'll definitely keep in touch. We'll work on that. Go ahead, Dan.
I became aware. I read a lot of news, and I've just been a news junkie, so I knew about the story, but I became really aware of you and the personal situation and your activism when I found you on Twitter, 8 or 9 months ago, I think, and I clicked a friend thing, and you sent me a direct message, which I think you probably send to a lot of people, telling me about Jamil, and it was so heartfelt. You said, help in any way you can, and I kept thinking about how can I do anything, and then this came up, and this is good. And you mentioned prayers earlier. Prayers. When I was 17, I was a bit of a. I wasn't like your nephew. I was a little jerk. I wasn't killing people, but I was a little jerk. So I was an emancipated minor. My dad said, "You know what, kid? Here you go. $100 and a bus ticket. Good luck." And well, he learned a lot in that year I was gone when I had to work and support myself. But I was taking a cross country bus trip, and I met this. Evangelical Christian lady from the South. She happened to be a black lady. And we talked about a lot of things. It really opened my eyes. I like to listen to people and talk with people. And she told me something that stuck in my mind, and it's a great phrase, about prayer. She said that prayers have to have feet. And I didn't get it. And now I do, which means God helps those who help themselves. What happened to your family was a tragedy, but it's not what happens, it's how you take it, it's what you make of it. There are people who have tragedies in their lives, we all do, of one kind or another. We all lose, we all hurt, and some of us become insulated and isolated, some of us become mean, some of us turn out to hurt others, and some of us, many of us, find that in the healing process, we've got to do something for other people. Because you know what? There's nothing that anyone can do to bring back Jazz. He's gone. But there is something we can do for the next young man or woman. We can save them. And it's not going to save every one of them if we got rid of every illegal gangbanger in this country. Because we've got our own problems. But it is a step in the right direction. And as you said, you can't eat the elephant in one bite. Well, I'll give you another story. It's a feel-good story. It's a true story here in my township. Last year, they tried to pass the quality of life ordinances, which is Agenda 21 light. And when we found out about it, retired disabled Marine was at a meeting because he was bored. And he found out, and he told me, and I did some research, and he said, what do we do? And I know politics, so I told him how it works. And we won the election. We defeated a popular incumbent by one vote. One vote.
Wow.
And it can happen that way. And that's, we're still continuing the fight because we've got one guy on there who's right. We've got one who's kind of somewhere in between. We're not sure. And one is just no darn good. I think she may be a very nice person. And maybe at one time she had some ideals. But she's the chief of staff for that particular politician I wasn't naming earlier. The only reason I'm not naming him is because I don't want to embarrass him, except locally. I hear him in this area. He's a state guy, you know, local guy. I'll embarrass the heck out of him. It was nice to be with you as well. And all this came because we hurt. My family lost, and the transformative thing in my life was that I grew up with, that was part of my family, is that all of our – one of the major things is that all of our relatives who stayed behind in Europe, 200 to 300 people – you know, cousins, et cetera, all the whole family, the ones who didn't come over, two of them lived after the Holocaust. And we grew up with that. That was my great grandparents. It was my mother's cousins, you know, that gone.
Wow.
And this doesn't make us special, and it's not just Jews. It's happening today. It happens to people. They lose. And the question is, do you turn out to do the same thing to other people, or do you shut down and do nothing, or do you make sure that you do everything you possibly can to see that it doesn't happen again and that the people responsible are punished? Now, by the way, you mentioned elections. You're in L.A., so this is going to be kind of familiar. I'm close to Philadelphia, where I grew up. And in Philadelphia, there's a neighborhood called North Philly. Big, big swath of territory. It's not as big as L.A., which is the size of a small country. But North Philly, it used to be white, and then it was white and black, and it was mostly black with white, and now it's white and Asian and black and Hispanic, and it's a melting pot. There's Koreans there, all kinds of people, okay? And a lot of them are poor, and they're really struggling. Now, Althea, you've got a tight family, and I'll bet you anything that when you get together and everybody's talking about, you know, hey, we want to order some food. We don't feel like cooking. And everybody agrees on pizza, somebody's going to say, no, I want Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Every family has somebody has that. Every neighborhood, every block, every single workplace you've ever been in, everybody agrees. Somebody, just for the sake of saying no, will say no. Just because they're a contrarian. It's a part of human nature that some people are just like that. God bless them. They're a pain in the you-know-what, and it's worth it. In North Philadelphia...
Well, I like Chinese.
Well, yeah, I like food. Food's good from wherever. But in North Philadelphia, not only was there, and this is just amazing to me because I don't know how it's mathematically possible, but 108% turnout of the vote. Of all the people registered to vote, they all showed up plus another 8% on top of it. I don't know how that's possible. But of the 108%, 100% voted in 2012 for Barack Hussein Obama. 100%. Even in Stalin's Russia, you don't get that. That's not possible.
Yeah.
Okay? There's not one person who walked in there and says, I don't know anything about politics. I don't care about politics. They all want this guy. Ha ha, I'll vote the other way. That's how he won that election. Targeted voter fraud in key districts. And we're going to have to be on the lookout for this. So, folks, those who are still listening, because we're going to wrap it up in just a moment, one thing you can do that's really, really easy that you can do with you want one or two other people, you don't want to be the only person, is become a poll watcher or an informal poll watcher and show up at the polls on election day. This is great for retired people, great for students. This is great for people who have alternate work shifts, okay, or if you're unemployed. You can show up and do nothing more than serve your country and your neighbors by making sure that their votes count, period. Whoever they vote for, it's an honest vote count. I will accept an honest vote count, but I don't go for this vote fraud.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's in the voting machines, I like to go back to the Chaz myself, but I do see there's only about 7 minutes left, and I do have some final comments here from Kelly. And he does like to interject some humor into it, because unfortunately he did get he pushed the wrong button and kicked himself off. But he said, but at least if I'm not talking, I cannot commit the eighth deadly sin, hogging the microphone. And that is the final comments from Kelly, sent from Facebook. Thank you, Kelly. He said, always wanting to interject some humor. So we will have to, unfortunately, go ahead and start closing things off. And, yeah, definitely I'd like to reiterate what you were saying, Dan, about watching those polls and especially with those voting machines. And even if we do watch them diligently, I do sometimes wonder if that's even enough while we still have those voting machines that can be, you know, the software could be manipulated so easily by those who know how to do it.
That's true.
So if you if you got a couple, just for about a minute, to closing thoughts, and then you, Dan, and then I'll have to close things out, folks, to this quick 3 hours. That goes by so fast on Bard's Logic. What do we talk? Go ahead, Althea.
Just lastly, I'll say I'm on Twitter at Jamil Shaw's aunt at Twitter, and then we're also Jamil Shaw's family is on Twitter at Go Jamil's Law Go. That's Go Jamil's Law Go. And again, Jamil's Law would deport gang members who are in the country illegally, and we're going to be orchestrating a way to go to all the local politicians to put them on camera, ask them about Jamil's Law. So I will keep you in the
great
loop
idea
on that. And so I just appreciate the opportunity to get the word out, and we just thank you so much, and I'll tweet out the link also to let our supporters know if for all those
awesome
who missed it. Thank you.
Great, thank you. And then we'll have to get together offline so we can work on the logistics to do a rebroadcast of your Sunday night shows here on Bard's Logic. As I said, it probably would be on a Tuesday or a Thursday evening that we'll do those rebroadcasts. So, Dan, just a
great
few moments, and then I'll have to close things out.
I want to just let everybody know, spelling makes a difference when you're dealing with computers. They don't know if you spell it wrong. Jamil is J-A-M-I-E-L. So when you're looking it up, if you put in any other spelling, you're not going to get the result you want. So it's J-A-M-I-E-L for Jamil's Law. And I don't know what else to add other than this is a tremendous thing that we've got good people who are taking terrible tragedies and turning it into a massive positive thing, and they're not giving up, even though it can be very discouraging. We have ordinary people. None of us are special, okay? Althea is a good woman. She's a nice lady. She's your next-door neighbor, okay? But she's not.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. But you're not special because of who you are. If this had never happened, nobody would ever know who you were. If this country wasn't messed up, I would have stayed selfish and just – I like my quiet life. It's gone. I love that quiet life. I really spent a lot of time just reading and thinking and just studying and playing music, and it was just a beautiful thing, and I could no longer do that. I felt it wasn't a call from the Lord, like religious, all right, guys out there, because I know not everybody's into that, and I make no claims about being some kind of holy guy or anything. But I've been wrestling with my sense of conscience for a long time because I've been aware that this country was going bad, the wrong direction, the same direction that ended up losing so many in my family, that's happened so many times across the world. And I kept thinking, no, the people are going to wait. It's going to get fixed. It's not going to get that bad. And it's getting that bad. And I just finally got to a point where I stopped wrestling with God and said, you win, okay? Because God does give us gifts.
And with that, Dan, I hate to cut you off, but we are going
to
send things off. We'll only get a few seconds for the close.
You need a longer
out
show, Robert.
I'm telling you, if I could do 4 hours, you know, we would do it.
We'd so, want five.
Yeah, you know what? There may be some way I can finagle something since but the way the timing of the show is kind of like we did with that special edition we had to where we got cut off and then had to restart it. But with that being said, I don't want to get cut off, and I look like I'm going to be. But tonight, folks, I will end tonight as I do every night, and that is with the song by Aubrey Ashburn. You can hear more of her music at www.aubreyashburn.com. So we will see you all next week, and then we'll also be enjoying having Althea's show on here. So looking for that shortly. And take care. Good night, and we'll see you next week.
Okay, good night.
Good night.